much about.
You gotta put it in perspective.
Now we've come this evening to bring you some joy, some happiness, inspiration, and some positive vibrations.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
I'm in love with seahorses. I'm in love with them. They're so beautiful and cute. I'm in love with the seahorses. They're unreal. I love them. I love them. Seahorses. Forever.
I love America. I really do, because every time I come here, I feel so welcomed and safe. It's true. You guys, you really know how to treat white people.
And now,
Kevin and Bean, calling from the beautiful island of Oahu, Hawaii. Just wanted to wish the morning show a big aloha. Aloha! With doo-doo on it.
Our feature presentation.
Okay, calls from Hawaii for that?
It's been a while. It's been doo-doo. A while since we had any doo-doo.
That guy, I mean, he's in Hawaii.
It's nice of him to think of
calls
us, Kevin.
With that? Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It is Monday, the 12th of January.
Well, from what I've been hearing so far, it sounds like everybody had a pretty busy weekend.
Very busy, yes.
Yeah. People had stuff going on.
Yeah, it was fun.
How about that Foo Fighters show?
Yeah, I didn't.
What? You were so excited about it.
Couldn't have been more. No way to be more excited.
I've been hearing all about it.
And then when you heard what happened, how did you miss that?
Well, you miss it before you hear what happened.
Well, that's true.
So,
right. So would that have changed things?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
You were so excited to go.
Look, I'm not a scheduling genius, let's be honest. So a lot of friends coming over Saturday night.
Oh, so you already had something planned that you've forgotten about.
Yep.
And you thought, oh, I'll just go to food. Oh, wait.
What is it in, I don't know, there's something in my mind where there's never that conflict. If I'm thinking about friends coming over, that's awesome. That's going to be fun. And then I can think in the very next minute about the Foo Fighters and go, that's awesome. That's going to be fun. And there's no clash ever.
I wonder what.
How does that work?
It'd be happening great to there. Live in that world.
No, it isn't.
You need to be cloned, my friend.
I need to. That needs to happen. That's for sure.
Well, I'm sure we'll talk about it more later. But for folks who didn't know, this was the sort of a surprise Foo Fighters show that they just put on sale, you know, a couple of days before, and they sold out the Forum, and it just turned into an all-star birthday party with lots of Dave's friends, including Tenacious D and Alice Cooper and Paul Stanley from Kiss and Lemmy from Motorhead and Slash and Zakk Wylde, and just one right after another getting up on stage, and just David Lee Roth coming out and doing some Van Halen. I mean, it just sounded like one of the best nights ever.
Yeah.
Didn't
he sure would have enjoyed that.
I would have loved it. No question.
All right. Well, obviously, we got football to talk about. We got Golden Globes to talk about, too. But let's get started with this story, because I love this one so much. In India, apparently, it is very difficult to fire somebody in a government job.
Okay.
You need approval from pretty high up in government to get fired. And I have read several articles about this story that mentioned that that's part of the reason that India isn't undergoing the same kind of renaissance that China is in terms of progress being made in the country is because it's just bogged down in a bureaucratic system that just the wheel turns so slowly it's almost impossible to get anything done. So this is really highlighted by this story of a guy named Sri Verma. He works for the India's Central Public Works Department, and he started there in 1980, worked for 10 years, no problems as an employee. But in 1990, he stopped turning up for work. He just got fired last week. He hadn't been to work for 25 years before he got fired last week for not coming in.
Was he being paid?
That's the only...
I want that gig.
That's the question that everyone is asking. That is not addressed in the official statement from the India Central Public Works Department. If he's being paid, this is the greatest life that's ever been lived.
Oh, my God.
He joined as an assistant executive engineer back in 1980. He went on earned leave that he asked for, requested, and was approved in December of 1990 and never came back to work. He did seek an extension of leave which was not sanctioned. He defied directions to report to work. There was an inquiry instituted against him in 1992. I love that, by the way. 2 years he's out before they started inquiry on his case.
But this isn't a case of he just didn't show up and everybody lost track of him. They knew he was gone.
Yes, that's right.
Wow.
At some point, I think they do lose track of him. So an inquiry was instituted against him in 1992 for major penalty for willful absence from duty. Due to non-cooperation of Sri Verma with the inquiry and for other reasons, he got delayed. But a fresh charge sheet was issued in 2005. So they forget about it for 13 years. The inquiry report establishing the charges was submitted in July of 2007 and was accepted by the Minister of Urban Development in August of 2007. So that's lightning speed. That's only a month later. So no further action was taken on the matter. He remained in employment for another 8 years until he was sacked at the end of last week. It is not clear whether he was paid for the whole period. So 25 years he doesn't show up for work, and finally they fire him.
Well, you got to draw a line someplace.
I guess so.
For them, it's just after 25 years of going missing.
I hope he was getting paid.
Me too.
Would that be because he would never stop bragging to his friends about, you're not going to believe this. I didn't go in again this week, and I still got a paycheck.
Smartest man alive.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right, let's talk about today's Kevin DeBeto, shall we?
Welcome, you bunch of despicable, spoiled, minimally talented brats.
We have comedian Simon Amstell on the program today.
Mm-hmm.
We're excited about that. Andrew Siciliano will be here from the NFL Network talking about the NFL playoffs this weekend.
Yeah.
What a weekend, right?
What a weekend.
Three favorites, three home teams, all won. And then what happened to your little friend, Peyton Manning?
I don't know why he's my little friend, but I'm not sure. Okay. I think the Colts just outplayed him. In every way, that was a great game. Fred Armisen will be here today, talking Portlandia.
Awesome.
Love Fred.
Back. Love him. We have Harvey Levin from TMZ, and we've got Golden Globe highlights. Bean's going to play some highlights, plus we have Matthew Bellany from the Hollywood Reporter. Mm-hmm. He's going to be here today talking about that. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the Showbiz Beat next. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. It's Kevin and Bean Show, and it is 5:53. Should I try it again?
Yeah.
106.7 K-Rock is right. KROQ.
So far, so good.
Kevin and Bean Show.
Yes.
5:53.
There we go.
There we go. Hey, Ralph Graman, how was your weekend, sir?
Oh, exhausting.
You still doing a little podcast?
Glad here it works. I can just take a nap and relax and rest, lay back and just take the foot off the pedal a little bit. Yeah, busy night at the Improv on Melrose on Friday night, and just busy weekend. But it was good. Good weekend.
All right.
Happy Batman Day, everybody. Happy Batman Day.
Today is Batman Day.
Yep. Woo! Woo! Why am I the only person?
Didn't know that was even a day.
On this day, back in 1966, the very first episode of TV's Batman debuted on ABC television. And thus began an empire. That's right, citizens. Batman versus the evil Prince of Puzzlers, the Riddler.
Holy question marks, Batman! Sure, and it is back, Batman, don't you know?
So, congratulations to Adam West and Burt Ward. Before Keaton, before Clooney, before anybody. Batman.
Who's Adam West?
How dare you! Speaking of Keaton, congratulations to Michael Keaton, who won a Golden Globe last night at the big Golden Globes. He won for Best Actor in a Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. Amy Adams won for Big Eyes for Best Actress in that same category. Best Actor in a Motion Picture Drama, Eddie Redmayne for The Theory of Everything. No surprise there. Julianne Moore won for Best Actress in a Drama in something called Still Alice, which I didn't even know was a thing.
Not heard of that.
That is a thing. It's getting rave reviews. I think it's not in a lot of theaters. That's the one where she plays the teacher who has Alzheimer's disease.
Ah.
And apparently she's just astonishingly good, as she is in everything.
Best motion picture drama was Boyhood. Best motion picture comedy or musical was The Grand Budapest Hotel. Best supporting actor in a motion picture, J.K. Simmons for Whiplash. Best director went to Richard Linklater. Best Screenplay Motion Picture went to Birdman. Best Original Score, The Theory of Everything. Best Original Song, Glory, from Selma. On the TV side, Best Movie, TV Movie or Miniseries went to Fargo. That was kind of cool.
Sure.
See those guys win. Best actor in a series drama, Kevin Spacey for House of Cards. Best actress in a series drama, Ruth Wilson for The Affair over there on Showtime.
In the a little bit of a surprise.
Musical comedy categories, Gina Rodriguez won for the Jane the Virgin show on the CW. Boy, does she need to relax a little bit, take a step back. Her freaking speech. Don't get me started.
Yeah.
Thank you, God, for making me an artist. Okay, you're on Jane the Virgin on the CW, okay? You're not starring in Mammoth on Broadway, cha-cha.
By the way, Kevin, I was very disappointed that you didn't get thanked by the CW.
Yeah, really?
They won their first Golden
Globe.
You're
the guy who watches.
You're their number one viewer.
How dare you. Best actor in a TV series, musical or comedy, Jeffrey Tambor for Transparent. That's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. That was just some of your big winners from last night. It is Monday, so let's take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office, shall we? Taken 3, in its debut, shows that Liam Neeson still has the biggest box office draw in Hollywood. $40.4 million made Taken 3 number one this weekend. Big, big numbers. Selma, people love civil rights. I've always said that.
I've never heard you say
number
that
number two at the box office, $11.2 million. Great joke by Tina and Amy last night. The Civil War, I mean, the Civil Rights Movement in the 60s, which worked, and now everything's fine. Into the Woods was third. The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies was fourth. Unbroken was fifth. The Imitation Game turned out to be number sixth this weekend. Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb was seventh. Isn't that a relatively new film?
I thought it came out around Christmas, didn't it?
Did it? I don't remember when it came out. It just strikes me odd that it's down there.
I think it was during our holiday. It
really hard to keep track of movies over the holidays.
That's for sure. Annie was eighth. Woman in Black 2 was ninth. And then The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1 rounding out your top 10 at the box office this weekend. Sad news. Comedian Taylor Negron passed away. Very, very funny man. Good actor, too. He was terrific in a movie called Punchline with Tom Hanks. One of my favorite Tom Hanks films. He is also probably well-remembered as the guy who delivers Jeff Spicoli's pizza in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He also starred in roles in Stuart Little and The Last Boy Scout, and Better Off Dead, Friends, Seinfeld, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and a great stand-up comedian as well. He died at just the age of 57 over the weekend.
We had him on the show a couple times back in the day, Ralph. He was fun. Good guy.
He is a very talented guy and a very funny man, so it's sad news for the comedy world. Today's celebrity birthdays, One Direction's Zayn Malik is 22 years old today. I may be joining that One Direction. It looks like a pretty good gig.
I think you'd like it.
Joining the band or
Band? Joining One Direction.
Okay.
Looks like they get to travel the world and they have a good time and make a lot of money. Harry Styles apparently now dating Victoria's Secret model Nadine Leopold.
Okay. So there are some side benefits to being in the band.
I might join up. Seems like a pretty good gig.
Has there ever been a Ralph in a boy band? Because it seems like they got, you know, they got a Harry and they got a Zane and they got a Muhammad or whoever that other kid is.
Liam.
Liam, yeah. There's no, I don't see a lot of Ralphs in that business.
I don't think there's any boy band Ralphs. No.
There was a Ralph in the boy band that Bart made.
All right there, Piermuck. Thanks for that. Naya Rivera from Glee. She's 28 years old today. Rob Zombie. Singer, director, writer, actor. Can do it all. 50 years old today. Actor Oliver Platt is 55. Howard Stern celebrates his 61st birthday. And Kirstie Alley turns 64 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
How'd you like to go not only to Coachella, but to see any band playing Coachella again anywhere they play in the world sometime in 2015? How's that for a good deal?
That's pretty cool.
That is KROQ's World Tour 2015 destination number one. We've got it for you this morning at 9 a.m. and then throughout the day at noon, 3, 6, and 9. Get the details at KROQ.com. Kevin, I was thinking about you last night. I was watching the Golden Globes, and I saw Louis C.K., who was up for an award. He did not win, but I was looking at him and then looking at the clock going, he's got a show to do.
He was at the Golden Globes?
Yes. He was at the Golden Globes until, Lisa, was it at least halfway through he was still there?
Yes, and I was thinking the same thing, and then I thought, well, Kevin must have had the day wrong, which he does
which
often.
Which very possible.
Because how would he do that?
So apparently he must have left shortly thereafter to get to the forum to do his show, but he had a very busy night, didn't
he? It was supposed to start at 8, and the warm-up guy came on, I don't know, about 8:20, and Louis C.K. came on about 8:40. So.
All right. Well, he had time to get there. I was also thinking what a big night Jack Black must have had being on stage at the Forum with Tenacious D and Dave Grohl, and then the next night in a tuxedo up on the Golden Globes. It's just weird lives these stars live, isn't it?
Yep.
Anyway, overall, I think very positive reviews for the show. The best part was Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, who were back as hosts. This is it signed a 2-year deal, so they've already announced they're not going to do it next year. And I think they are going to be missed because they are terrific MCs. Here's a couple of highlights from their monologue.
Tonight we celebrate all the great television shows that we know and love, as well as all the movies that North Korea was okay with. That's right, the biggest story in Hollywood this year was when North Korea threatened an attack if Sony Pictures released The Interview, forcing us all to pretend we wanted to see it. North Korea referred to The Interview as absolutely intolerable and a wanton act of terror. Even more amazing, not the worst review the movie got.
It is funny because it became a free speech issue. It became our patriotic duty to go see that movie whether we wanted to or not.
Right.
So very funny jokes. George Clooney was there last night to accept the Cecil B. DeMille Award at only 53 years old, by the way, but he's had quite a body of work. They said something interesting when they brought him out later in the evening, which is that he has been nominated for Golden Globes in more different categories than anyone in the history of the Golden Globes.
Huh.
Because he's been nominated as a director and as a writer and as a producer, as an actor. So he's covered all the major categories. And I thought the best line of the night from the hosts was this one about George.
George Clooney married Amal Alamuddin this year. Amal is a human rights lawyer who worked on the Enron case, was an advisor to Kofi Annan regarding Syria, and was selected for a 3-person UN commission investigating rules of war violations in the Gaza Strip. So tonight, her husband is getting a lifetime achievement award.
That was just brilliant.
It just points out how ridiculous Hollywood is, doesn't it? The most controversial moment of the night in the monologue involved, and I guess we knew it was coming, jokes about Bill Cosby.
And into the woods, Cinderella runs from her prince. Rapunzel is thrown from a tower for her prince. And Sleeping Beauty just thought she was getting coffee with Bill Cosby. You know, actually,
listen to the crowd.
I don't know if you guys saw this on the news today, but Bill Cosby has finally spoken out about the allegations against him. Cosby admitted to a reporter, "I put the pills in the people. The people did not want the pills in them."
No, Tina, that's not right. That's not right. It's more like, "I got the pills in the bathroom, but I put them in the people."
I thought they pulled that off very funny.
I knew they were both going to do an impression.
I never would have guessed them doing a Bill Cosby impression. A couple of other funny things on stage. Ricky Gervais, who you recall was a not altogether successful host of the Golden Globes a couple of years ago, he was back, and he did a variation on that thing that he does where he makes fun of stars.
If we've learned one thing, it's that famous people are above the law. As it should be. So, I'm not going to be like the terrible things you've done to get here tonight. Streep.
Looking right at Meryl.
Clooney. I'm not even looking at Katie Holmes. let's get on with it before I say something insulting.
By the way, as he always does, he did bring his drink on stage.
Yeah.
He loves to do that.
He will not be separated from that drink.
If you are looking around for some hosts for next year's show, I think I may have something for you. They came out to present the Best Screenplay Award. It was from Saturday Night Live, Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig, who also started that very funny movie a couple of months ago together, too. And I thought they did a great chunk.
I do know we wouldn't have some of the most classic movie lines without these writers and these scripts.
Yes, famous lines like we all know, like from E.T., you know, when he's pointing his finger into space and he's looking at the stars and he says, "Kids, I gotta get back to my planet."
Yeah.
Remember when he said that?
Yeah, he's like, "I gotta get out of here.
I gotta get back to my planet."
It's been fun. Or who could forget that famous line in Titanic when the boat's sinking and Leonardo DiCaprio is like, "Hey, guys,
relax."
What about in The Terminator when Arnold's driving down the street and he pulls up next to that guy and he says,
"Excuse me, which way is the Beverly Center?" "That way? So I passed it?"
Very funny stuff from them. Two of my favorite speeches of the night. Billy Bob, who won, a little bit of a surprise, by the way. Everybody thought True Detective and Matthew McConaughey were going to win. But instead, for that category, it was Fargo and Billy Bob. And he gave a speech. What do you guys think he's referring to here?
These days, you get in a lot of trouble no matter what you say. You know what I mean? You can say anything in the world and get in trouble. I know this for a fact. So I'm just going to say thank you.
What trouble has Billy Bob Thornton gotten in?
I was wondering myself.
I don't know. It's still weird. A very funny speech, though. I'm always happy on an award show when somebody gives a short speech. And one more clip. We'll have more later, but one more clip. It was nice to see the Grand Budapest Hotel win. I think a lot of people thought in that best film for comedy or musical category that it was going to be Birdman. But Wes Anderson gets up. He gives a speech for Grand Budapest. I thought it was very funny.
I'm not going to spend many of my few seconds up here thanking people like Stephen Rails and Scott Rudin and Jim Giannopoulos and Nancy Utley and Steve Galula. Juman and Owen, Rafe and Hugo, Jeremy and Bill, Roman and Jason, Randy and Edward and Adrian and Jeff and Tilda, Jim and Rich, and especially James L. Brooks and Polly Platt. Instead, I'm going to focus on the membership of the Hollywood Foreign Press, Yoram and Dagmar and Yukiko and Munawar here, Lorenzo, Armando, Hussam, Jean-Paul, Hans, Helmut. These are the people I want to thank tonight, and many others with names nothing like theirs, but equally captivating. Kirpi, Erki, Anka, and so on. I thank you for this Golden Globe.
Very clever. By the way, I could practice that 80 times in a row, would not be able to get those names out and like he did.
I could nail it.
Yes, you could, Kevin. From Portlandia, actor Fred Armisen. Next hour here on The Kevin and Bean Show, we'll talk NFL with Andrew Siciliano, comedian Simon Amstel, and from The Hollywood Reporter, Matt Bellany later on, talking about Golden Globes. That reminds me, with Harvey Levin on the line from TMZ.com. Harvey, good morning, and what are you and the staff saying about the Golden Globes last night? Enjoy the show?
That doesn't sound very positive
or exciting.
I don't know. I mean, it's an award show. I'd like to thank my producer and my director and whatnot.
I think it's important to record and watch later so that you can fast forward through a lot of it.
Harvey, I know I've been gone from California for a long time, but why are the women all orange now? What's up with that? Did you notice that Jennifer Aniston and Amy Poehler and a bunch of the ladies got up there and they were just orange with that spray tan?
It's a thing. It's just a thing, and it is weird because it isn't exactly the right color.
Right.
Then again, who am I to talk?
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't use it, but for some reason, I look it.
That's true. That's not even fair because you're in the actual sun. It should look real, right?
I get so much crap from the people here.
That's funny.
But I swear to God, I don't.
What did you guys think about the, really only the newsworthy thing of the night was how they were going to handle the Bill Cosby. And we played the clip a couple of minutes ago when they started doing those jokes, and there were some audible gasps in the crowd.
Yeah, except you know what? They knew. I mean, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler said beforehand they were going to crack Cosby jokes, so everybody knew it was coming. There were some gasps, but what I found most interesting was they chose to cut to Lena Dunham. Lena Dunham, who really was probably, you know, like a cheerleader almost for them. And that was just an interesting cut. Hollywood is a lot about, you know, kind of pack psychology, where everybody kind of latches onto the same thing and they embrace it and everything else. My sense of it was there was a little bit of shock, but it was almost, I think there was like this tacit approval, go after Cosby. I mean, that was just the sense I had. And, you know, it's hard to read a group, but that's kind of the sense I had. I mean, it didn't stop people from laughing.
It also feels a little bit like maybe we shouldn't be laughing at this.
Because it's such a serious topic.
Yeah, did you get that sense or no?
I didn't. Okay. I mean, I got the sense that people kind of, maybe they thought, oh, God, I shouldn't laugh, but I really want to laugh, so I'm going to laugh.
Right.
No. There wasn't anybody pro-Cosby in the crowd that they could cut to, because very many of those people outspoken in Hollywood.
Yeah, no. Nobody was booing them. Nobody was, you know, looked upset or anything like that. That was kind of from mild shock to approval. That's
exactly
what it seemed to me.
All right, let's move on to one other thing. Bad news, shots fired at a Chris Brown concert. Worst news, Chris Brown was not hit. What can you tell us?
Stop it. Oh, my God. You know, it was really weird because it was up in San Jose. Happened over the weekend, and it was like 1:45 in the morning. And when you look at the video right before the shots fired, it seems real peaceful.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing that made you think, uh-oh, the people are riled up in the crowd. And then it just sort of came from nowhere, and five people were shot. You know, again, this is kind of subtext, but this happened, I think, you know, if my memory serves me right, this was when Suge Knight was shot. I think Chris Brown was up there then. And when the shots rang out, he didn't duck or do anything like that. And there's a certain amount of, like, it's bizarre, but it's like street cred that you don't want to look panicked and run. And, you know, I remember it back then. This one just kind of looked jumbled. And it also happened really fast. But there was really kind of this interesting psychology there about, you know, the people on stage, if they don't, you know, you can't show fear.
Huh.
And you didn't necessarily see fear with Chris Brown, but again, the camera was all over the place.
Yeah, it was all over the place, but I did have the thought while watching the video that if that were me and a gun was fired, phone is gone and I am on my way.
You're down.
They really hung in there.
It's like, you know what it's like? No, I'm just going to age myself. It's like it was a relative of Abraham Zapruder.
See, he's the guy who shot the video of John Kennedy being shot, you guys.
Oh, yeah. God, thanks a lot.
Good pull. Good pull for our audience, Harvey. Well, it is amazing to see that video. And we don't know. I mean, I saw people taken to the hospital. They were hit. But there's no indication that they were aiming for Chris Brown or anything like that. It was probably just a fight in the crowd between people. One of them had a gun, right?
Well, they've detained a couple of people, and we've been checking. And so far, as far as we can see, there are no arrests, and they have no idea why this happened. So,
gotcha.
It looks like the whoever did this still.
I think trouble just follows Chris Brown around, even though he had nothing to do with this.
Blame it on him.
It happened because Chris Brown.
Exactly. All right. More on that story and so much at TMZ.com. Definitely check out the website multiple times a day like we do. You can watch them on the TV all over Fox, including TMZ Live at 4. And then TMZ Hollywood Sports airs Monday through Friday at 3 on The Reels Channel. Harvey, thanks for your time, dude. Have a great week.
You too, guys.
Thank you. I felt bad for people like Lisa May who don't watch football this weekend. How great were those games?
Almost all were great.
I heard there was some big controversy with,
the Packers Cowboys game with the Cowboys receiver where it was a catch that wasn't a catch. Yeah, we're going to be, I think eventually they're going to, I mean, they've been talking about changing that rule for a long time, but after that, they got to change that rule.
That was
a
play at the end of the game where it made all the difference. Could have been a completely different outcome.
Yeah, would have given them first down and, you know, right on the line, and they probably almost certainly would have scored, and then it would have been a race for the Packers to come back in that last 3 minutes and score again. I mean, it was a great game, and it's kind of marred by that call, which the refs say was the right call. According to the rules, the problem is the rules suck.
Oh.
That's the problem.
Okay.
There was a little bit of not controversy, but certainly some surprises in the Patriots-Ravens game, which was another incredible game, by the way. I mean, I think that game was 28-28 with what? 4 or 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
I mean, it could have certainly gone either way. But once again, Tom Brady and the Patriots are going to advance to the AFC Championship game next week. Bill Belichick, I didn't see the press conference afterwards. He's on the phone right now. I'm sure he was just jumping up and down with just joy and glee at winning that close game. Hi, Coach. Welcome back to the Kevin Amin Show, sir. How are you?
Good.
Good. Your team was down 14-0 and then 28-14. Did you get worried at all?
Nope.
Okay. Wow, you do sound excited, Coach Belichick.
Mm.
You are the winningest coach in postseason history now. You surpassed, or I guess maybe you tied with Tom Landry now. I guess you're at 19 postseason games that you've won. That's an incredible legacy, sir. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Was it your idea to do the trick play with Edelman?
No, they made it up themselves.
I'm saying, like, maybe an offensive coordinator. I don't know.
No, you don't.
I don't know, no. That's why I'm asking.
So Tom Brady throws a lateral to Julian Edelman, who then passes the ball downfield to Amendola, I guess is the guy's name, into the end zone. A beautiful spiral, 51-yarder, I think it was. Best pass of the day, not even from a quarterback. You guys practice that from time to time. It's been in the playbook for a long time, but why'd you finally decide to use it then, Coach?
To score.
Well, right. was there something in this particular game that made you think that play would work? You've had it for a long time. You haven't used it.
The need to score.
Okay. All right.
Tom Brady, by the way, also in the record books, he has thrown more touchdown passes than any other quarterback in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty incredible. And you know, for all the people who say, wow, he's finally getting up there in age, at some point the dude's got to retire. The way he played on this weekend, he looked like he could play another 5 years.
Yep.
Anything you want to talk about, Coach?
Brady's kind of a pussy.
Tom Brady is a pussy? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Just thought you should know.
Okay. For any specific reason, or?
Don't hit me. Football, Tom.
That's your quarterback.
I know. Still a pussy.
Are you looking ahead at all to Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts coming in? They looked pretty good yesterday. Coach?
He's gone.
He sure is.
He was sure done.
Done with you guys.
He was finished.
That's for sure.
He's not...
I don't know what's happening.
I think we got maybe got on another line here.
Yeah.
What happened there? That was kind of weird.
Okay. Good times. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 6:51.
We found out something so shocking about our producer, David King of Mexico, a man that we at one time respected, a man that we thought we knew.
When? When did we respect him?
Really? What? We didn't respect Dave? I thought he was on the respect.
Let's go with liked.
Okay. A guy we liked. And then we found out something so shocking and so horrible that we need to publicly shame him on the air coming up right after the top of the hour. Also, actor, comedian, musician Fred Armisen will be here as well, talking Portlandia. Ralph is here now. Time for the showbiz beat on a Monday.
It's a guy we used to call Half Salad, by the way. Yeah. I don't think we had a lot of respect for him. We pretty much mocked him from day one.
I think that was the first time we ever went out to lunch with Dave, and he ordered a half salad.
Oh, I just have half a salad.
We all went, who orders half a salad? Just order a salad.
No, it's just half of it.
Just eat part of it.
All right, half salad.
That may have been the last time Dave ever ate a salad.
That's true, yeah. I think we scared him right out of salads. Now, in retrospect, we made a poor choice.
That's on us.
Let's take a look at the show business news. It is Monday morning. Let's take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office. No surprise, Taken 3 stomped the competition at the box office this weekend. $40 million made it number one in its debut.
That family sure has bad luck on vacation.
They are not blessed. Selma, story of the great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., came in at number two with $11.2 million. Then Into the Woods, The Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies, and Unbroken were your top five. The Imitation Game is number six. Then Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb, Annie, The Woman in Black 2, Angel of Death, and The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1, rounding out your top 10 at the box office this weekend. Sad news, Taylor Negron, very funny comedian and actor, passed away over the weekend. He had been suffering from cancer. He was just 57 years old. Stand-up comedian, also did plenty of acting gigs, including Seinfeld and Friends and Curb Your Enthusiasm. Movies like Fast Times at Ridgemont High and Punchline, Stuart Little, Last Boy Scout, Angels in the Outfield, Better Off Dead. Very talented guy and well-liked in the comic world. So
he wrote a very funny piece that was republished over the weekend on the announcement of his death about how he was one of those, I know that guy, actors. And he couldn't walk down the street without people of all ages and backgrounds coming up to him and knowing him from something but not being able to place it. And he was one of those guys who had to go through his whole resume until you came up with what you knew him from. It was very funny.
If you've never seen Punchline, the Tom Hanks movie with Sally Field, he plays a stand-up comedian in that, and he's great in that film, as is Tom Hanks, one of my favorite films. But sad news over the weekend. Speaking of comedy, more protesters at Bill Cosby's third and final stand-up performance in Canada on Friday night. This time, the protests were inside the theater.
It's about time.
Bill began his stand-up act in Hamilton, Ontario. A group of about 30 women stood up and took off their shirts to reveal white T-shirts underneath with the words, "We believe the women," printed on the front and back of the T-shirts. Some of the protesters blew whistles, while others chanted, "We believe the women." Well, security came and dragged them out of the theater. And some people started yelling back, "We believe the man."
What is going on?
And
with
we
those...
love you, Bill, as security dragged the protesters out. Cosby continued the rest of the show without incident. Who are these people?
Who are these people? You have to at least have doubt, don't you?
Yes.
Yes.
And you have to at least not go to his show, right?
I would think.
How can you settle back for an evening of ha-ha when that's even in your mind? The possibility that that guy could have done that thing.
Well, they clearly don't entertain that possibility. Like, they must just be convinced that it's all false. I don't know.
I heard last night on television, he put the pills in the people! Oh, that was just the Golden Globes, yeah. Amy Poehler and Tina Fey. Speaking of the Golden Globes, a few highlights. Best Motion Picture Drama went to Boyhood. Best Motion Picture Musical or Comedy went to Grand Budapest Hotel. Best Actor in a Motion Picture Musical or Comedy, Michael Keaton for Birdman. Best Motion Picture Actress in a Musical or Comedy, Amy Adams for Big Eyes. Motion Picture Actress for a Drama, Still Alice, Julianne Moore. Best Actor in a Motion Picture Drama, Eddie Redmayne for The Theory of Everything.
Is it just me, or was there a complete lack of any popular movies that people had gone and seen?
Yeah, they were small, independent. Well, you know, look, that's the nature of critical success these days. It doesn't look like the big blockbusters really garner much critical attention, and vice versa. The small, independent films that everyone says are really well done don't get a lot and make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Aren't seen by a lot of people. It's kind of sad. When it came to TV, best TV series drama went to The Affair on Showtime.
That was a surprise.
Yeah, what? Here's the thing. This is the foreign press, so you don't know what they're going to like.
They love affairs, too.
They do. But it's not... sometimes what we here in America think is popular or is well-received, it's different in other parts of the country. Parts of the world, rather, and it's just a different vibe. And so, apparently, The Affair is a very popular series with foreigners. I mean, it's a good show. I've seen a couple episodes. It's well done.
Best?
But they really like it. Best TV series musical or comedy, Transparent. That was the big shocker of the evening. Amazon's brand new original programming and content division getting a big pat on the back with their new series, Transparent.
Was that a comedy or a musical?
It is a comedy, yes.
Okay.
It is interesting that Amazon.com, do we still call them that, or is it just Amazon?
I think it's just Amazon now.
They won 2 Golden Globes last night. NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, none.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know who won for Best Actress in a TV Series, Musical, or Comedy? Gina Rodriguez for Jane the Virgin. Look. I understand that Jane the Virgin is a popular little sitcom over there in the CW.
Right.
Gina Rodriguez. But you need to calm the F down. Did you see her speech last night?
Did not know.
Oh, here's some highlights from her speech last night.
Thank you, God, for making me an artist. This award is so much more than myself. It represents a culture that wants to see themselves as heroes. Right. My father used to tell me to say every morning, today's going to be a great day, I can, and I will. Well, Dad, today's a great day, I can, and I did.
Okay, all right, look.
She's happy, Ralph.
I know.
And surprised.
Look, I get it. It's a very nice thing to get an award for acting. But it goes back to what Tina Fey and Amy Poehler said earlier in the evening. Like, Alameddine has done things to help the world in crisis.
Right.
This is, you're on the CW on a sitcom, and they gave you a little award. Say thank you. And then get off the stage. But if you start thanking God for making you an artist and how you're representing a culture that wants to see itself be heroes, just calm the F down, Jane the Virgin.
My favorite part of her winning is that she was so far away that she was going down hallways to try to find the stage. It took her a minute to get to the stage.
Do they? They so could trim an hour off that show if they would widen the aisles by 6 inches. Because everybody took 40 minutes to get to the stage.
Did they keep the people up front that they think will win? Or
yes.
No,
yes.
Just no?
Okay. Yes. The bigger the star, the more likely you are to win. The closer you are to the front. Exactly.
And I know she was surprised and she's happy, but it's still just a piece of metal from some critics who'd like your work on a TV show.
Yeah.
But I mean, people like J.K. Simmons, I mean, people have been around for a long, long time who have put in bodies of work, got out there and said, this is very pleasant. Thank you so much. Good night. Kevin Spacey said a very nice thing. Billy Bob Thornton. Just calm.
first, it's probably her first big win.
Calm. Let's all remain calm, shall we? It's the Golden Globes. It's one step above the people's choice. Let's all just relax. Today's celebrity birthdays. Kirstie Alley, 64 years old today. Howard Stern turns 61. Legendary John Lasseter from Disney Animation Studios and Pixar. He is 58 years old today. Oliver Platt turns 55. Rob Zombie's 50. Naya Rivera is 28 years old today. And One Direction's Zayn Malik. He's a dreamy 22. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. It's Kevin and Bean Show at 6 minutes after 7 o'clock.
K-Rock's World Tour 2015 Destination Number 1. This is a great deal. You not only win passes for this year's Coachella, but you get to see any band playing Coachella anywhere in the world in 2015. You get to pick the band. You get to pick the city. More details at KROQ.com. Your first chance to qualify happens at 9 o'clock this morning right here on the Kevin and Bean Show.
So Ralph's in the studio, and the King of Mexico are in the studio, and Ralph is just shaking his head no.
I think I'm in trouble.
Staring him down.
Just rolled up trouble, his sleeves. He's giving me the glare of death.
It's just, oh, Dave. It's just so heartbreaking. It's just so sad. So tragic.
Last week, we found out, when Dave mentioned that Glee was on Friday night, we found out that Glee is still on the air.
Yes.
None of us had any idea that Glee was still a TV show that was currently being made, but apparently it is.
Glee is back for his final season. I'm going to watch.
I feel like I was in on the first six or seven seasons, and then I lost track somewhere.
First decade,
okay. All right. And then I lost track somewhere along the line. I didn't even know it was still on.
Has it been off for a really, really long time? Is this like a reboot or something of the series?
No, it was off for a while, but it's just because, last season ended, and now it's coming back for the final season. It came back for the final season, I should say.
All right, so Friday night it came back. In case you're curious, by the way, Ralph, you'll appreciate this. Glee opened with 2.3 million viewers, a 0.7 rating among adults 18 to 49. Now, granted, it did move from Thursday to Friday nights, but the premiere for the season ratings for the premiere episode were down 65% from last year.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was the lowest rated regular episode for a series on any major broadcast network Friday night.
Woo!
So Dave is alone in watching Glee.
But he's not alone in disliking it. Here's the bizarre
thing. This is the thing. I don't care if he watches it.
Yeah.
We all have shows that we like that other people don't like, and you watch them for as long as they last, and you enjoy them. That's fine. But when he told us that he doesn't like Glee and hasn't liked it for years, but still must watch it, he's compelled to watch it, that's when my head exploded.
He said he didn't like the last two seasons.
Yeah, I used to really like
How many seasons then, have there been for reals?
This is the sixth season.
Okay.
So
for a third for of three, the show's entirety.
Yeah, there was three seasons where
been,
I loved
You haven't
yeah.
been a satisfied viewer.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you don't like it, that's where we all started to go, hey, don't watch.
Well, it's such a simple solution.
Here's what happened. Look, first, I loved Glee, right? It was what it was. And then then they split the show off into two kind of separate shows where it's, Rachel and Kurt in New York and the kids at
Okay, here's
at high
my
school,
thing.
Where I was still kind of into it because of the high school. And
sure, because a man your age should really relate to the high schoolers.
Well, like Sue Sylvester and Mr. Shu and all them back the Glee Club.
Sure.
Right? So I liked that part. And then it was the New York part, which I hated.
Okay.
And then last season was all New York, which I even hated even more.
Okay, so.
But then I hear about how it's going to get back to the high school. And I was like, okay, so I think I'm going to stick around it. So I did. And I.
Okay, here's my thing. I don't care about the local and then the New York. And here's the thing. If you don't like it, don't watch it.
Right. It's so simple. Then you don't have to torture yourself but keep saying, oh, I'm so unhappy with the show that I keep watching every week.
I have to watch it.
I don't know. There's something about just watching a TV show where you start it and you invest so much time into it, you just got to see how it ends.
Right, but
it's ending.
Hold on.
I know. It's eight more episodes or whatever, that's all. I'm out.
Hold on.
And I'm free.
But this isn't.
You're free now, Dave. That's what we're telling you. You're free anytime you want to be.
This TV show is not Lost, where you are invested.
That's going to be a big reveal. Oh, Mr. Shu's an alien.
Like, what's really happening? You sort of have to see that one through, even if you're not thrilled with it.
No, I even bailed on Lost.
You did? Okay.
Yeah. But you can bail on anything.
You can, but I'm just saying that type of show, Lost, a lot of people did stick with because they needed those answers.
That's not
There's
the case.
No, answer,
no. That's not the case.
I just got to see this through. I just
now,
gotta
why?
See. I don't know if these kids are these people. I don't know.
Of
I
all just... the things in your life that you don't see through, the one thing you're going to commit to is a bad TV series? That's where you draw the line?
Yeah, I had to do
I'm
this
finally with... going to show some personal responsibility by watching every episode of Glee?
Yeah, I had to do this with Revolution as well. And I sat through and watched that to the bitter end. And it didn't even have an ending, which pissed me off. Now, this is something that's going to have an ending. It's going to have a finish, and I'm going to watch it. I don't know why, but I am.
Hey, Dave, do you ever order a meal in a restaurant, and you start to eat it, and you realize it's just not very good? But you ordered it. You paid for it. You better finish all of it and eat every bit of it on that plate.
Yes, I do. That's like, I ordered it, I might as well finish it.
You're the weirdest person ever.
Well, because if you don't eat it, then you're not going to get full.
Well, that's hard to argue with, but
or you can go eat something else that you like.
Yeah, but I already paid for it. So
who has? Here's another question: who has the time in their life to follow things they don't enjoy?
Right. That's a great point, Kevin, because we all have shows that we know are good that we haven't had a chance to check out yet.
Look, I watch everything on TV, so you know I have time. I make time.
Okay, so you watched it.
I watched it. Yeah.
And how was it?
I gotta say, the first episode I kind of liked because it was all like Rachel was in a terrible free fall and I, you know, that's the character I hate. So I was like, yes, suck it. You failed at everything. Thank God. Finally. And then on the second episode, it was kind of getting back to what made Glee pretty good and like building a Glee club.
Wow, got all the way back to pretty good, did it?
Yeah. So, you know.
2 hours in, it started to get watchable.
How did it reach those heights?
So, and it included the pretty much the original cast. So that was pretty cool to see, but I don't.
Did Finn come back?
They did mention him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's good. But
even that, I'm not positive I'm watching.
Yeah. So.
You're selling it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. No. I mean, like,
listen, like we're all missing out.
No. Listen. I'm not saying to watch it or anything because
it's not good. Right?
Because it's not going to end well.
Okay.
But I have to see how it ends.
Couldn't you just look at a recap on a line or something and have someone
it's not
tell
the same,
you? How
man.
It
it's not the same,
man. I had that kind of time. Don't you? I'm going to sit down now for 2 hours and watch something I know I'm probably not going to like.
You want to know how I watched it? And this, you guys are going to trip out on this. So I have it recorded. So every time the football game was a commercial, I would watch 2 minutes at a time.
You watched
You're
that
the
show.
Worst television viewer in history.
It took me till about the second half of the second game.
So you watched the crappy show all disjointed.
Yes. That's how bad I don't know. Am I addicted to TV or something? Like,
you're just,
why do I have to watch a show?
That's our question to you. Why are you watching a bad show? Why are you wasting your time on a show that you don't enjoy watching anymore?
But maybe because I do enjoy like the music and stuff, like that aspect of it.
Oh, if there's only some way you could get music.
Yeah.
That you didn't have to sit through an hour-long TV show.
No, it's only available on Glee, Ralph. Sorry.
You can't get the song Frozen. I know that. No. You can't get that anywhere else.
You can get the songs from Glee the next day on iTunes.
Yeah, I know. But I don't want that. I just want to watch it. I want to watch them perform it.
But you don't like it. You watch it and then you don't like it.
I like Naya Rivera.
Okay.
I like
She's 35 now, Dave.
I know.
Okay.
Here's the she was in a cheerleader outfit.
I think here's the answer.
And by the way.
So last night I'm watching the Golden Globes, and we pretty much knew the big names that were going to be there. You know the Meryl Streeps and the Ricky Gervais and the Jane Fonda. A lot of big names had been announced previously as presenters and whatnot. But there was a gasp from the crowd when this announcement was made.
Please welcome a music icon who is a Golden Globe, Oscar, and Grammy Award winner, ladies and gentlemen, Prince.
And out walks Fred Armisen dressed up like Prince. And Fred, I got to tell you, I saw you do that character so many years on Saturday Night Live, but it was hilarious. You came out there with the big afro and the sunglasses and you had the cane.
I think that was Prince.
And you didn't even break character. That was the amazing. I mean, you played it so straight. It must have been so much fun for you to do.
Thank you. It was hard to read the cue cards with the sunglasses on.
Doesn't he just look like a parody of himself now?
It's incredible. I mean, like, he really is Prince. He's so Prince.
He's so Prince.
Top to bottom, all the way through. And even the way that no one knew he was going to be there, that's the most Prince thing about it.
Like, but then also the complete and entire lack of effort.
Yes, yeah. He just mumbled through his lines. I mean, I was trying to figure out, like, what's in it for Prince to make the effort to be on stage at the Golden Globes. That can't do anything for him.
I don't know about that. Maybe it's, you know, it could be a last minute whim that, you know, he thought, okay, this might be a fun thing to go to. I mean, I really don't know.
He doesn't strike me as fun.
No, he doesn't.
He was on New Girl, and I thought he was pretty good on that, but...
Yeah.
Now, you've met Prince, I assume, Fred, right?
Yeah, only briefly, and he was nice enough.
He seems like it'd be a lot of effort to try to have a conversation with him because he seems so quiet.
Yes, I think everyone else does all the sort of conversing for him, you know what I mean? Like everyone, like I know that I really wanted to talk to him a lot, so I did a lot of the talking. But I'm such a fan that I could understand how people just want to, you know, like, hi, Prince, and, you know, make him
happy.
Don't
you have that feeling, though, when you're talking to him, like he's probably done with this conversation.
Oh,
he doesn't
yeah.
care what I have to say.
Oh, yeah. It's a kind of a one-way thing where I'm just like, I'm just going to tell you you're great, and I'll just remember the memory of telling you that you're great. And I suppose that's probably worked for him. You know, he's probably gone through his career that way and been able
well,
to.
Well, he's an oddball. He's definitely an
he's
oddball.
He's a good enough performer. Maybe he can get away with it, though.
Yep.
You know, he's such a great performer. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, that's where people's focus is, or is that the right grammar? Focus.
Yeah,
that's where
his
focus.
Yeah.
So yeah. Who knows? But that was really. It was funny. It was totally shocking. I had no idea.
What did you think of how your close personal friends Amy and Tina did last night? We loved them.
God, I loved it. I loved it so much. I loved it because I was, you know, like laughing for real, not like, oh, those are my friends, so good for them.
Go, friends, go.
They really are. They're just a. They're just these joke machines, one after another, and all the jokes are at the right timing right after each other. Mm-hmm. It's pitch perfect. My sweet spot all the way through. And the North Korea stuff, also, like, they added that to it. So it's not just jokes and writers. They added some theater to it and some, you know, some real
visual
comedy.
I love that they
comedy.
Actually seem to be for real best friends. And that makes those of us that are fans of both of them just happy to think about that they have a real relationship. It's not just for TV.
Oh, yeah. No, it goes way back. It goes back to their improv days and everything. And even throughout SNL, they were always close.
That's great.
Yeah.
By the way, Fred Armisen in studio, if you haven't picked up on that, IFC's Portlandia is back. Season 5 just premiered. Fred is also the musical director for Late Night with Seth Meyers on NBC, so he's a very busy guy. I like to think that you and Carrie from Portlandia are also super good friends in real life.
Oh, yeah.
That makes me happy, too.
The closest. Definitely the closest relationship I've ever had. And she's really, you know, she inspires me and... she's just my pal and at the same time my coworker. I'm very fortunate. I'm very lucky to get to hang out with her.
I watched the first episode of Portlandia from last week, and I just remember thinking to myself, if I were given that topic or most people were given that topic, couldn't have made it interesting. But you guys somehow mm-hmm. did.
Yeah, it takes the writers and stuff and everybody, and we want it to be something unexpected, almost like the Prince appearance, you know?
Yeah. Sure. And the episode you're talking about is the backstory on the feminist bookstore, where you go back 25 years, basically, to show how those two came together to become the powerhouse that they are today.
Oh, my God. I can't believe that's 25 years ago already. Thinking of the 90s. That is
I know.
It's so crazy. Yeah. We wanted it to be not like the – when we first started writing it, it was going to be that there were these radicals and that they were in a punk band and stuff. And we kept hitting a brick wall of like, well, what's funny about that? That's exactly what's expected. So we thought, what is the most – what world would they come from that is not where the feminist bookstore is? So we did the corporate world of books.
And you got to wear some very sleek business suits.
Yeah.
Women's business suits.
A lot of makeup, a lot of shoulders.
Pretty sexy. Got to be honest, pretty sexy.
Sexy.
I think you spend more time as a woman on your show than you do as a man, Fred.
Yeah, isn't it weird? I mean, and we never...
And Carrie spends more time as a man than she does as a woman on some episodes.
We never planned it that way, but it just happens. We're like, okay, this is the best sketch that's going to work for us right now, so let's do it like that.
All right, now, I know this seems like a little bit of a spoiler alert, but the show's been on the air for a few days now, and you can still catch the rerun of episode 1 on IFC, but we have to talk about the dance-off, because Kevin and I are firm believers that all disagreements can be settled with a dance-off, but this is one of the most epic dance-offs I've ever seen. Please tell me how that came to be and how you ended up dancing to I Got the Power by Snap.
Well, that was more of a... We wanted it to look almost like a 90s movie. And that always seems to happen in 90s movies where there's like this like dance off or some kind of something at a club where they really have to confront each other. So we wanted it to look really cool and really aggressive. And then, you know, we don't have a very big budget. We really wanted that song. So we spent most of it on getting the rights.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Why that song over
it said
any other
so
number?
Much
because, yeah.
because of the lyrics. Because of the beat, right away you know what decade it is.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't, you know, sometimes you do sound-alikes for stuff. This was one that we could not cut corn, you know. Cut that
now, did you get to make the phone call to the guy, whoever's still alive in Snap, to give him the good news?
No, that's
that they were going to get paid?
That's all some legal department somewhere that takes care of it. So we just get the good news.
Like, did you have a plan B?
Yeah, we had some others from Technotronic.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Like Move This or something, one of those?
Yeah. Move That Body. Yeah. maybe who else was there? Sandy Dennis? What? D-Mob? Wasn't she in something? There was a couple of those bands that had like a certain sound back
yes,
then.
Yes. Very early 90s. Now, did you guys choreograph your dance-off?
No. I choreographed mine in my head. I was like, I think I'm going to do this and this and this. And then Carrie did the same. We did it all in only a few takes.
I was going to ask you how long the dance-off took to film. Because I imagine you probably tried 100 things.
Yeah. But we also had so many extras around that we couldn't really do too much over and over because it wouldn't match right.
Right.
So we just kept it to like we kind of knew what we were going to do and we just got to it. So we just did her side and then my side.
That has to be the – I mean, look, you do a lot of ridiculously silly things in your line of work, Fred, and have for a long time.
Uh-huh.
But when you are dancing like that, that's really the bravest kind of comedy in front of all of those people to go out there and shake that ass like you had to, right? You just have to go for it. You cannot hold back.
Yeah, it's kind of for the editors of the show. Like, I want them to feel like, wow, they really went out and shot something.
All right, before we take a break with Fred Iverson, here's a clip from this episode one of season 5 of Portlandia. The show is back and funnier than ever on IFC. It's so great. And here is your character, and basically you are being hit on and winning over the head of the publishing company, and this gives you a little idea of what Fred's character's like on the show.
Candace, let me guess. Candace, I'm in love with you. I've heard it my whole life. Elementary school, high school, college, the working world. You're so beautiful. I love your profile. Oh, let me drink you in. I want to hear the sound of your voice. I wrote this poem about you. I wrote this song about you. But now it's your turn, Bruce. What are you gonna do for me?
The job is yours. Everything is yours. Just take me.
Buckle up and get ready for the ride of your life. I've got two airbags with your names on them.
Very sexy stuff, kid. Very, very sexy stuff. Portlandia airs Thursday nights at 10 on IFC. More with our guest Fred Armisen right after this on K-Rock. Fred Armisen in studio with us here on The Kevin and Bean Show, co-creator, co-writer, co-star of Portlandia on IFC, also the musical director of Late Night with Seth Meyers.
Hi.
I bet there were some people, Fred, who were surprised when you were named as the music director on that show because they had no idea what your background was in music. I mean, you've been doing music longer than you've been doing comedy, right?
Yeah. I mean, it all happened so fast. It was Lorne Michaels' idea. And I had done some music stuff on SNL, you know, as fake bands and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that, like, I just approached as, like, when they asked me, I was like, I'll give it a try. You know, I didn't know.
And do you love it?
It's great because I get to, you know, play music with my friends. I get to hang out with Seth. I really do love it, but I had no idea what it was going
to
be.
Were you afraid you might not be able to do it well?
I was so sure that I couldn't do it well that I had nothing to lose.
Okay.
So I was like, I don't know how to read music. I don't know how to play jazz. So, but they know that about me. So I didn't have to like resell myself to them. I wasn't like, you guys, I'm the best. You have to have me. I was like, this is your choice.
Hey, it's on you if it doesn't work.
You want me there. You know how I play guitar, how I play drums. Let's just leave it at that.
And I guess part of that is you look around to the other late night shows and you see band leaders like Paul Schaefer, who's a musical genius and it can do anything. And you look at, you know, Max Weinberg and people like that who are like legitimate all-star rock guys. And you go, really? You're gonna have me do it? But, I mean, it's perfect for that vibe of that show, though. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a good fit for that hour and that host, I think.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I think late night is changing, too. I think, you know, all these talk shows and everything, I think that – or even TV is changing where I think people's roles are becoming interchangeable. So It makes some sense to me.
The band that you were in, that did we ever play them on K-Rock Trenchmouth back in the day in the 80s?
I doubt it. Okay. We were 90s.
90s, okay.
Maybe you might have, like, when we were on a major label for like a month or whatever, I'm sure they pushed single.
What was the biggest moment for that band, the point where you were at the height of your career?
We did not do great, but we toured all the time, and we played in cities that I loved playing. I got to see the whole country, and we would play in cities like Minneapolis. Seattle, I remember, was really good. Dallas.
Who'd you open for back in the day?
Fugazi, Circus Lupus. In Chicago, we opened for Smashing Pumpkins for a couple shows.
That's got to feel real. You got to feel like you're an actual, like, musician at that point, right?
You know, it's different in that, like, when you're that age and when you're in a band, all you want is more and more and more. So you just keep thinking, okay, but now we got to open up for this. Now we got to go to this next venue, and we got to, you know, get bigger and bigger. So there's this, like, burning ambition the whole time, where if it was now, I would be like, oh, this is great. I'm a working musician. But back then...
You wanted to be a star.
Back then, yeah. You're just like, it's like having a machete, and you're just going through the jungle. Like, come on, guys. Now we got to get this single out, and we have to tour this part of the country. And, you know, I had a lot of fun with my friends. It was great playing in the band, and I love playing the drums, and I got to see some great cities. But
did the band, was it a slow dissolve, or did it end suddenly?
It was a dissolve of, like, I remember looking around and going, like, we are not making it. This is not what I envisioned. And I saw this guy who was older than me walking down the street, this drummer for another band, and I thought, oh, I don't want to be like that guy. Like, still struggling, still carrying my drums around. Mm-hmm. It just was, you know, because Smashing Pumpkins were on the same, we started around the same time. So all these bands were just zooming past us.
I can see that.
Yeah.
When they're on the cover of Spin and you can't afford to buy that issue, that's when you realize we're going in opposite directions.
There was a real thing of, like, after the first couple of years was like this, like, okay, I get it. They're more rock, they're more poppy. We're experimental and punk and angular and I get it. But then, the more years that pass, I was like, this is past the point of making any sense.
What about the whole don't give up on your dream thing? What about that?
We've been told that our whole lives, Fred. Is that a lie?
The positive spin is that I turned that dream into another way of doing it. So I was like, I'm not giving up on show business. I'm not giving up on entertaining people. How about going towards comedy? So
now that's interesting.
It's only a slight turn, but it's not like going to an office job. I just thought this configuration is not working. So what else? What's an improvement?
Well, it's to your credit that you had something else that you were good enough at that you could give it a try. I mean, a lot of musicians, I think, that they grow up thinking that's the only thing they can or want to do. If I'm not in music, I don't want to live. And then when music doesn't work out, then they're really in trouble. I mean, at least you had the vision of, hey, there's something else I can do that's equally satisfying.
I was very lucky.
Yeah.
And you just have to look for clues in your life, you know, just
had, like, you done any comedy to that point?
No, but I think I got a better reaction doing anything comedic than doing anything musical. So those are the cues I took.
You sort of felt that feedback and went that direction.
Oh, yeah, like immediately. Yeah.
So you felt that you had grown up getting laughed at a lot for things that weren't supposed to be funny. And
that
was the clue, right?
Yeah. I mean, I remember, like, just impressions and imitations of people and stuff where it seemed like that was more entertaining. So, yeah.
Fred Armisen is here. We're talking about Portlandia. It's Thursdays at 10 on IFC. Let's talk quickly about the guest stars that are on your show this season.
Yeah, we had Matt Groening, who did The Simpsons, Paul Rubens, Jane Lynch, Jeff Goldblum, and Kyle MacLachlan, as usual. This was a really good one, and we try to get
Justin Long is hilarious in episode 2 of this season.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Well, he looks like Carrie when she's in drag, you know, when she's got a mustache on.
They're practically twins.
Yeah, so we wrote a whole episode about that.
Steve Buscemi is back. You've got Parker Posey this season. Yeah. Paul Simon. I mean, I guess that's the beauty of the longer the show is on, the more fans it picks up, the easier it is probably to get people that you maybe wouldn't have been able to get before.
Yeah, and they come all the way up to Portland and spend the day up there.
Do you have people contact you that just would not fit on that show?
Oh.
And they go, hey, we love the show, we'd like to be on it, and you go, I'm not sure.
That's an interesting question. You know, not that I remember. I think it's more like if it doesn't work, we think, okay, we'll just try another time. But we try to sort of make something work because it's such a nice thing for someone to go, I would like to be on your show.
Yeah.
That
I loved Jack White last season so much.
Oh, yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah. All that was very lucky. He happened to be in town. So we got him to come down. And he wanted he wanted to not talk in it. And we're like, great. because it makes it easier. You know, it's so much more – it's just funnier to see someone's face and like instead of having to come up with a bunch of lines. I was like, great. You made it – you know, we didn't have to think of it.
He said to you, I want to be on the show, but I don't want to talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, which Portlandia, I mean, even you and Carrie must be surprised that you're still going strong five seasons in.
Oh,
I mean,
God,
I'm sure when you started, you thought, oh, this would be good for a couple of episodes or web series or something like that. You had no idea it was going to turn into a thing, right?
No idea. No idea. We thought it would be a pilot. It's almost like getting away with something. We're like, oh, my God, we're going to get paid to do a pilot.
And we get to do more.
Yeah, and every year.
And was it the same in the second season? This is ridiculous.
It's crazy. And also, the number five, I'm just like, how did that happen?
Yeah. I mean,
you know, to go from one to the next is incredible.
You could do more than 10 episodes a season. That's my one complaint.
Well, it starts to, like, jumble in our heads as we keep all the episodes together. Then we start losing track of, like, okay, what was happening in this story? It's like, 10 is just the right amount for our little brains.
And they do both have other jobs, too, Kevin.
Well, I know.
So they are definitely keeping it pretty busy. So
stuff well, Fred, I like, I want more of. I guess that's basically
I want to say something. I want to say that
yes.
I seriously love Los Angeles so much. This is such a great city. I love it, love it, love it. Whoever lives in L.A., you're very lucky to live here. It's a beautiful place to drive around. I love every part of it. The history of like all the movie studios and stuff, I think is very American and very just really rich. So I just wanted to say that I love L.A.
Especially if you're stuck in traffic right now.
Yeah.
You could live in L.A. if you wanted, Fred, but you keep taking jobs in other cities.
I keep trying to live in L.A. and then I just keep having to go to other places. But I will end up
You'll
here.
Be back.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Fred, why aren't you on Twitter, by the way?
I think I'm not as good with words as people are. Some people are very sort of like witty and fast and like – I think it just takes me too long to think of something that's – I'm too self-conscious about it.
It's just – it's so rare to meet someone in your business who's not.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I should. I don't know. I just it's some people are just so good that I'm like I'd rather just read what they write, you know.
Gotcha. Well, congratulations on Portlandia. We're so happy to have it back. Congratulations on the Seth Meyers Late Night Show too. You guys are funny on that. And anytime you're in town, we love it when you come by. Thanks so much.
And congratulations to you guys for being on for so long.
Thank you, Fred.
IT professionals shouldn't be forced to haggle when choosing PDF software. Now they can uncompromise with Nuance Power PDF, the scalable, easy to implement solution at a reasonable price. Try it free at nuance.com/powerPDF. PDF Uncompromised. I'm Lisa May with K-Rock Traffic.
Thank you, Lisa. It's world-famous K-Rock at 7:54.
I'm sorry, if we have time, could you explain Nuanced Power PDFs to me, Lisa?
It's PDF Uncompromised. I don't know how hard that is to understand.
Well, it's just...
PDF can be difficult.
I'm so tired of my PDFs being compromised.
Right.
I want them pure and unadulterated.
Don't we all, Ralph?
Yes.
Well, you're the person to go to then, I guess.
Obviously.
Hey, we'll talk more Golden Globes with our friend from The Hollywood Reporter, Matt Bellany. Also, later this morning, Simon Amstel, very funny young man out of Britain, is going to be joining us in studio. Ralph is here now. Time for the Showbiz Beat on a Monday.
It is a Monday, so we take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office. Taken 3, no surprise, was once again number one at the box office. Another Taken film just sweeping the nation by storm. $40 million made this Taken number one this weekend.
Kevin, you see that?
I did. I liked it a lot.
I have a chance to see it. Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
But it looks like he's...
About halfway through, I was like,
looks like he's not guilty of killing his wife.
I'm not sure, you know, because it's the third one.
Yeah.
I liked it.
And when Tommy Lee Jones has him in that drainage pipe, and it's like, I don't care! You're coming back with me. I didn't kill her. He jumps off this drainage pipe. I love that scene. Oh, wait a minute. That was The Fugitive. Selma. It's number two at the box office with $11.2 million. Into the Woods was third. The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies was fourth. Unbroken was number five at the box office. Then The Imitation Game, Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb, Annie, The Woman in Black 2, The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 1. All rounded up. Your box office. A lot of sad news over the weekend. Taylor Negron, very talented, funny comedian and actor, passed away at the age of 57.
Beats touching sound effects tribute.
And Anita Ekberg passed away. One of the biggest sex symbols of movies in the 60s. She was the star of a Federico Fellini film called La Dolce Vita. And she was a former Miss Sweden, a sex symbol that he put in his film. She became such a sensation after starring in that film in Italy that she became hounded by press and photographers everywhere she went, so much so that they had to come up with a term to describe the hordes of reporters and photographers that would follow her around Rome. The phrase they came up with? Paparazzi.
Ah. That's where it started.
That's where it all started, with Anita Ekberg. She reportedly, like, boned every guy she ever worked with in the movies, too.
All right.
Like Frank Sinatra and Errol Flynn and Yul Brynner just nailed them all. Anita Ekberg will be missed by those dudes. Especially. Ah! Harry Styles has struck again. This guy, this kid, does all right for himself when it comes to the ladies. The One Directioner has a new girlfriend. This time it's Victoria's Secret hottie Nadine Leopold. Us Weekly Magazine says they're getting very serious. Well, as serious as Harry Styles can get.
Sure.
Victoria's Secret mom.
I imagine the significant others of boy banders, like One Direction, I imagine they get a lot of grief from One Direction fans for dating their imaginary boyfriend, right? Like, all the Harry Styles fans are going to probably send hate toward this Victoria's Secret model because she's with Harry
mine.
And they're not. Exactly. Yeah. Seems like that'd be kind of a pain in the ass.
Didn't Harry date your girlfriend, Taylor Swift,
about a week, yeah.
Then he said, wait a minute, there are women.
And this one's the devil.
Women who aren't built like a plank who exist. I'm going to go visit that side of the world and see what happens over there, where curves exist.
She does look like a pretzel, if that's what you're asking. Straight, skinny pretzel.
And her bitter enemy, Katy Perry, who's performing, of course, at the Super Bowl on February the 1st, has announced her secret guest star she's going to have during her halftime show. It always cracks me up. This is like the thing now. When someone is tapped to play the Super Bowl, they invite a guest star to come by and join them. You have a 15-minute set.
Yeah.
Just do your show. You don't need to bring in help. But Katy Perry's announced that Lenny Kravitz will be her special guest star.
Ralph Garman.
No, he couldn't make it. But
she
will not also not be there.
Sarah Abramson.
This bit works better if I haven't said Lenny Kravitz, I think, beforehand.
Give us time. No time.
I think if I had said, who's going to be the guest star?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Then all of this horrible stuff you're doing now would play. But I said Lenny Kravitz before you started playing names.
But we were thinking...
My name is Iqbal Banotak.
Yeah, I don't care what you were thinking. You have to play the ball where it lays, okay? You can't just pretend something didn't happen and then go on to your horrible comedy shtick.
That's
I'm Henry Winkler.
That's my whole life. Talking about... You don't know, man.
I do know, man, sadly.
Starland Vocal Band.
You don't get to play the game. Today's celebrity
birthday. Who's Krusty the Clown?
Today's celebrity birthday is Kirstie Alley, 64 years old today. Howard Stern turns 61. Oliver Platt is 55. I like that guy. He's a talented actor. Speaking of talented, singer, director, writer, actor, Rob Zombie, 50 years old today. Naya Rivera. From Dave's favorite show, Glee. 28 years old today. We were just talking about One Direction. Zayn Malik is 22. And one of the geniuses over there at Disney Animation and Pixar, John Lasseter, celebrates his 58th birthday today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
We'll talk the big NFL weekend with our friend Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network in about 30 minutes. First, though, revisiting last night's Golden Globes, Amy Poehler, Tina Fey from the monologue.
You know what else is weird? So many British actors played Americans this year.
Yes, and I, for one, don't mind it. I love the sound of a British actor doing an American accent. I like when they talk like this. I can't tell that they're British when they are speaking in our movie parts. Wes Anderson is here tonight for the film Grand Budapest Hotel. Per usual, Wes arrived on a bicycle made of antique tuba parts.
That sounds about right. The executive editor of The Hollywood Reporter and a close personal friend of the Kevin Bean Show, Matt Bellany, joins us in studio right now.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Matt. How are you, man?
Doing well. Thanks.
Well, we are officially now the People's Choice is behind us. Not that anyone cares about that. Now the Golden Globes. We are just in the thick of award season. It is here.
I know. Are you sick of it already?
I am. I really am. Well, I mean, even last night, and we make fun of this all the time on the show, even last night, how are they still giving awards to things like True Detective that I feel like were a year ago?
Yeah, the Globes have that wacky schedule. You know, they have, they're honoring stuff from this season like The Affair and Transparent, but they're also going back to the stuff like Fargo and True Detective that, you know, a lot of people feels old.
Because we already went through all the award seasons with the Emmys for those shows, so that's why it just seems so old, you know?
And what you don't realize is that a lot of these movie people have actually been campaigning since September. They've been going to parties, they've been going to festivals, trying to get up there for this moment where they finally get an award.
Is this Golden Globes, is that the one where they really, you really have to wine and dine to sort of get your...
Well, the thing that's interesting about the Globes is there are only about 90 voting members of the Hollywood Foreign Press. And, you know, unlike the Oscar voters, these people are journalists. They want to go to parties. Right. They want to get invited to stuff. They want you to come court them. So there are all these little mixers and there's little events and screener parties and things like that that they all go to.
Okay. We've been talking a lot about the performances and the presenters and the hosts and everything, but I want to talk about some of the winners with you because you can kind of put it in perspective for us. Some real surprises last night. I mean, for instance, you mentioned The Affair. I don't think anybody predicted that that would end up winning for Best Series, and I think it also won an acting award too, right?
Yeah, Ruth Fisher won for actress. It is a surprise. I mean, the Globes have a history of honoring these first-year television series. They did it with Brooklyn Nine-Nine. They did it with Sex and the City going way back. I mean, they like to be out in front on these things before the Emmys, before the SAG Awards. And they did it this year with The Affair and with Transparent, the Amazon show. And that show won two awards as well for comedy series and Jeffrey Tambor for actor. So I think that the Globes like to consider themselves a little hip. We were on this before you were.
Right. It's still funny, and I know it's just, you know, content is content. That's the one thing we've learned, if nothing else, in the last few years. But just to see the word TV series up on the screen when Amazon was the folks behind Transparent, it's still weird to think that that's a TV series.
I know. I thought Tina and Amy might make a joke like, if you like Transparent, you might also like, you know, something like that. Because it is. I mean, these people are watching Transparent on the same interface that they, you know, buy their socks. It's kind of nuts.
Another big winner that won two Golden Globes last night was a show that I have not watched, but I've heard raves about, and that's Jane the Virgin, and Gina Rodriguez won as well. That's a big deal for the CW. They'd never won an award before, right?
Yeah, it's the CW's first Globes, first big awards, and it's actually, I think, it's a sign. I mean, you saw how far Gina Rodriguez had to walk to get to the stage. I mean, they did not put her close to the stage. I don't think people expected her to win.
She started in San Diego, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of nuts. The That is huge for the network. It's also huge for her. I mean, she is the breakout star this fall season. And, you know, an award like that, it's not the most highly rated show on the CW. So I think what they're going to try to do now is translate that buzz into more viewers.
What about the other networks? What about your ABC, your NBC, your CBS, and your Fox? What's my takeaway on the fact that they didn't win a single Golden Globe?
I think get better shows. I mean, you know, that the transition from the traditional networks to cable winning all these awards has been a long time coming. But I think what's interesting is that you have places like Amazon and Netflix really competing for these top awards, and even places like HBO. HBO only won one award. They used to dominate these things.
Yeah, true.
You know, you've got to have great shows. You've got to have new and fresh shows every year.
Do you like the fact that they split the movie categories into two for the Golden Globes in a way they don't do for the Oscars, so that allows a movie like Grand Budapest Hotel to win something?
I do like it. I think it makes it more interesting to have this comedy musical. I mean, people always complain about how, oh, it's not really a comedy, it's more, you know, dramatic. But you know what? So what? It allows 10 films to be up for Best Picture, and it allows films like Birdman and Grand Budapest Hotel to have a real shot at winning when most Oscar voters probably, it doesn't matter how funny a comedy is, they're going to vote for the more serious, more gravitas-type movie. And now something like Grand Budapest Hotel can have a shot at winning.
You know, you mentioned Birdman. We didn't get a chance to play this clip earlier, but I think it's really neat because we all love Michael Keaton. And he's been gone for a long time, right, Matt?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he went to Montana. He raised his kid. He sort of was out of the limelight. And then all of a sudden, he's got this resurgence.
And he's so great in the movie. And we didn't get a chance to play this earlier. So with your permission, I'd like to play some of his speech from the Best Actor drama from last night's Golden Globes.
My name is Michael John Douglas. I'm from Forest Grove, Pennsylvania. I'm the seventh child of George and Leona Douglas. And I don't ever remember a time when my father didn't work two jobs. When my mother wasn't saying the rosary or going to mass or trying to take care of seven kids in a run-down
farmhouse. She was volunteering at the Ohio Valley Hospital, where I was born, in the hallway. I've got six wonderful brothers and sisters. I have some tremendous, tremendously loving and generous friends all over the world. My best friend is kind, intelligent, funny, talented, considerate, thoughtful. Did I say kind? He also happens to be my son, Sean.
That was such an unexpected and sweet moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's a really earnest guy. One thing I've learned just in meeting him a couple times during this award season, he's very earnest, no nonsense. If he doesn't like a question a journalist says, he'll call him out on it. he's very kind of prickly, but he's also very emotional. Really, really interesting guy.
A lot of people, you know, they didn't realize Michael Keaton had a son, and they looked him up last night. And apparently, he's a very successful songwriter. He wrote a couple of those Jason Derulo hits like Wiggle. He wrote to Heart Attack for Demi Lovato. I mean, this guy's got a music career completely separate from dad. But that was such an unexpected thing last night. I mean, he can't have been surprised that he won, but that was such a heartfelt speech. And you don't see that on a lot of award shows.
You know, for a lot of these guys, someone like Michael Keaton, he's been going to these events and doing this stuff for a couple months now. And when you finally get up there and you are the winner and you're, you know, the spotlight's on you, they can get emotional. And, you know, they don't know if they're going to get another chance at the Oscars or at another one of these award shows. So some of them just put it all on the line.
But they're barely very few of them are that well spoken when put in that spot, though. I mean, that's a talent.
That's a hard thing to do, is to give a good speech.
Yeah, I mean, you see with some of the other people who won, you know, you've got to be good to do that kind of thing. And he's a good talent.
Matt Bellany is in studio with us. He is the executive editor of The Hollywood Reporter, talking about last night's Golden Globes. More with our guests right after this on K-Rock. Matt Bellany in studio with us here on The Kevin and Bean Show. He is the executive editor of The Hollywood Reporter. That sounds like a fairly important job in this town, Matt.
I guess so. I don't know. It's a fun job.
You're a tastemaker, man. You make the stars jump.
Especially this time of year, it's definitely fun because we get the lowdown on all the award show stuff.
I want to ask you a question that Kevin asked on the air earlier that I thought was a really good one after last night's Golden Globes, and that is, why is it the movies that win all the big awards, like last night with Birdman and with Boyhood and with After Alice and The Theory of Everything, why is it that none of them are hits?
That's a good question. That's not always the case. I mean, last year during award season, you saw movies like Gravity, which was a big hit. And, you know, movies that tend to get these awards through the season tend to become hits because people see them. They're a little bit curious. A movie like The King's Speech a couple years ago ended up making a couple $100 million just because it went through award season. And people said, I should probably check this out. That's part of the reason why the Hollywood studios care so much
about
awards.
But you look at all of the nominees, and most of them are not hits of
this
any
year,
size.
Yeah, this year is a tough year. We actually published at Hollywood Reporter a couple days ago a report that the Academy that gives the Oscars had, that they're actually worried about that for this Oscars,
I
that people aren't going to know the movies.
Yeah.
But you see movies like Theory of Everything and The Imitation Game, they're getting out there. People are able to see them.
Boyhood is certainly not for everyone, though, is it?
No, Boyhood, I mean, 3 hours, it's a very, you know.
And no plot.
It's got a plot. It's
plot is the dude grows up. That's the whole plot.
That's true. Although, you know, when you watch it, it's a stunt, but it's an incredibly compelling stunt. You see this kid, all of a sudden in one scene, he looks different, and it's not an actor. It's a really interesting experiment.
Yeah, I mean, it's never been done before. All right, let's play a couple more clips from the show last night. I want to get your take on it. One is that we were talking off the air about you still remember fondly John Travolta from last year with the Adele Dazeem, right?
Oh, it's the greatest award show moment of all time.
Well, Ricky Gervais made a joke about that last night that was very funny because the category that he was presenting involved that little girl with their super complicated, like, 15-syllable name that begins with a Q.
Quivenzhané Wallace, yes.
Wow, listen to
nice.
You.
Somebody's practiced.
I went to a special class for that.
She is in Annie, and it just cracked Ricky Gervais up how much trouble he had saying her name.
Quivenzhané Wallace, Annie. I've been practicing saying that last name, so I don't have a John Travolta moment. So I got away with it. I still watch that every day on YouTube. It's brilliant, isn't it? It's just brilliant.
By the way, I almost believe that he still watches that last night.
I believe it.
I believe it.
I thought one of the funniest jokes of the whole night was in the monologue with Amy and Tina. And this, I think, was the single biggest actual belly laugh from the audience as well.
George Clooney married
Amal Alamuddin this year. Amal is a human rights lawyer who worked on the Enron case, was an advisor to Kofi Annan regarding Syria, and was selected for a three-person UN commission investigating rules of war violations in the Gaza Strip. So tonight, her husband is getting a lifetime achievement award.
Did that make you, like, sit up and go, wow, Hollywood is actually kind of silly?
Yeah, I mean, it was a nice moment, especially since last year, Tina and Amy made a whole joke about how Clooney would rather be, you know, cut off and drift into space than spend time with a woman his own age.
That's right. I forgot about that joke.
Is that unusual for somebody to get a lifetime achievement award at only 53 years old?
Well, I mean, for the Globes, they've done it. They did, you know, Jodie Foster and a couple of other people around his age. I don't think it's that unusual. You just have to – I mean, Clooney's a huge star. And for the Golden Globes, they want the international gigantic stars that people are going to tune in for.
All right. Anything else from last night that you noted or liked or wanted to talk about?
I think it was interesting, the topicality of some of the jokes. I mean, the Globes are known as a big party, but there were a lot of serious moments. I mean, the fact that Tina and Amy made a very pointed Bill Cosby joke,
yeah,
mm-hmm. and that was a huge deal, especially coming on NBC, where Bill Cosby was a huge star. I think the fact that they made light of the North Korea situation, the Sony hack, and the fact that there were a lot of moments that were pointed towards the Paris situation. Clooney made reference and a couple others.
That's true.
It brought an era of kind of topicality and seriousness that you don't normally see at the Globes.
Yeah, I thought that was nice. It's a way to say, hey, look, we're celebrating what we do, but there's a lot of stuff going on that's important outside of this hotel ballroom right now. So right. Let's remember what's happening in Paris. And I also kind of got that some of the feels on that speech that Common gave too about Selma, where he talked, I mean, he kind of made some remarks that kind of made it sound like it's as relevant and current today as any time in the last 50 years, that civil rights movie.
Yeah, I mean, Selma is one of the movies that sort of got snubbed last night. They didn't win in director or picture, but there was that nice moment where Common got up there for song and was able to kind of say what everyone associated with Selma wanted to say. They said it for the song winner and not best picture, but they did get to say it.
All right, we're almost out of time here. What do you recommend our listeners do if they want to get the Hollywood Reporter coverage of Golden Globes and everything else that's coming up in the award season?
Well, we're going crazy today on THR.com. All the after coverage and the best, everything from best dressed to who won and who should have won. And we're in print this week, Hollywood Reporter Magazine.
Benedict Cumberbatch, best photobomb of the night.
That was pretty cool. He's becoming really good at this. I mean, someone needs to do a gallery of the best Benedict Cumberbatch photobombs of the year.
Because he photobombed U2 not long ago, too, right?
Yeah, and then he got into the picture last night. I mean, he's always got something interesting to wear. He's, was in that white tux, so he stands out more when he's in the background kind of yucking it up.
He's hilarious. All right, Matt, great to see you again, man. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Second and four. Again, time. Near side, intercepted! It's intercepted by Chancellor! Touchdown! 89 yards!
Ended up being 90 yards when all was counted, by the way. That was the nail in the coffin when the Seahawks beat the Carolina Panthers on Saturday. Patriots squeaked by the Ravens the same day. Packers over the Cowboys. And the Broncos lost to the Colts. What an amazing weekend in the NFL. And there's no one I'd rather talk about it with than our friend Andrew Siciliano from Around the NFL. Hey, sir, how are you today?
Hey, guys. Good morning.
What a weekend. What a great four games.
It sounds like a cliche, and it sounds like I'm a pitch man or a sycophant for the league when I say every single year, and I did it all last week, that this is hands down the best weekend of the year.
Oh.
And it was. I mean, obviously the Seahawks game wasn't that interesting at the end, but the other...
But it was a close game into the fourth quarter, though.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, you knew one team was better than the other, but Carolina did at least make it interesting.
I got to tell you, for my money, the Cowboys-Packers game was fascinating because both quarterbacks are barely alive. You know what I mean? Like they're limping around. They might die at any second.
You are carrying each of them to the line after every play.
Right.
Yeah. It didn't help that it was 20 degrees out either, right, Andrew?
No, although I will say this, it was a lot warmer than people thought it was going to be. Because during the week, we're looking at 2 degrees, 3 degrees. Fox labeled it Ice Bowl 2. The Ice Bowl, by the way, was 48 degrees below zero with the wind chill. 48.
Oh.
Just imagine that. With the wind chill, the Ice Bowl is 48
below. Who is this
below.
The Ice Bowl 2 then?
It wasn't.
It wasn't. Now, Andrew, would they I know the NFL is notorious. Hey, we play no matter the weather. If it were that cold in 2015, I don't think they play that game. I think
they
postpone it.
Great question. Now, again, that was the wind chill. I think the actual temperature was in the teens below, that mm-hmm. is.
But they played. I mean, even that Buffalo game that got canceled because of snow, they just relocated and still played it.
Well, it's a safety issue because people couldn't get there and all the public services.
That's probably what they do. They probably relocate it, which wouldn't be fair to the Packers. All right, speaking of the Packers.
Yeah.
So much for the officials have it in for the Dallas Cowboys, and they're going to make sure they make it to the Super Bowl. Will you please talk about, you've had a lot of time to chew over that tape. Recap for our listeners who maybe didn't see it about the Dez Bryant controversial catch and what it means.
Okay, a couple minutes ago, Cowboys driving. And they're down, and they need a score, and it's 4th-and-2. And instead of going for it and simply running the ball up the middle to DeMarco Murray and getting 2 yards, you're doing a short, easy, safer pass. Tony Romo sees single coverage on the outside on Dez Bryant and throws a deep ball to the end zone for Dez, who goes up and makes a catch that most human beings cannot. Calvin Johnson can make it. Mike Evans maybe can make it. Maybe Demaryius Thomas can make it, but most human beings on this earth cannot make the play.
All right, before you talk about the ref and how they called it and everything, I just want to point out that was one of the greatest individual efforts that I've seen this entire season.
Unbelievable athleticism, absolutely.
I jumped out of my chair and started screaming, not because I'm a Cowboys fan.
Same.
Because holy, you know what, did you just see
with that? With a guy on him, too, by the way.
Yes. But then he hits the ground and the ball comes out. And Gene Steratore is one of the best officials in the business, and he correctly and properly applied a rule and the fine print of a rule that most fans will not like, but he used it correctly. By the letter of the law, what Dez Bryant did does not constitute a catch, because when he hit the ground, the ball came out.
All right, so what should Dez have done differently to make that a catch, to make that not an incomplete?
Not have it hit the ground. And I know that people say, but wait a minute, he took 2 steps. No, he didn't. By the letter of the law, he didn't take 2 or 3 steps, as the Cowboys allege. He is still in the process of falling to the ground after losing or after going to the air. So if I jump up, let's say you see these sideline catches all the time. Guy jumps up, he comes down, he gets 2 feet in, but as he's falling, you need to watch him as he hits the sideline. Does that ball come out when he hits the ground?
Right.
This is the same thing. Even though it looks like he's taking 3 steps, he's still in the process of coming to the ground after he left his feet.
Right, he says that he was trying to push his body and his hands forward to make the goal line, is what he says.
And that is a very key distinction, because if they had taken that opinion, then it would have been a catch, and they would have taken those steps as steps, and the reaching for the end zone would have been considered a quote-unquote move common to the game. In other words, a football move, as people say. But the official... And the official in New York, Dean Blandino, helping through the replay, determined that that's just Dez coming to the ground. That is Dez jumping and trying to land, and he never landed. He didn't stick the landing.
Let me ask one other question, and that is this just something that Dallas is going to be chapped about, or is everybody in the NFL pretty much done with that particular rule and it might change?
I would say this. I Mike Pereira, the former head of officiating, gave me a great standard once. We're talking about this, and he said, There's a rule that he liked to apply, that's 100 drunk guys in a bar. So if you show 100 drunk guys in a bar a play, or sober for that matter, we don't like to, you know, have them drunk.
Sure.
Do 100 of them think it's X, and X would be a catch. And I think most people would say, you think it's a catch.
Right.
However, there has to be there has to be a standard to be met. You can't leave it up to officials to just look at it and go, judgment, yeah, he got it, because then you're making it all judgment calls. This rule has been applied before. Actually, the Calvin Johnson play, week 1 against the Bears 4 years ago, in the end zone in Chicago, where they disallowed a touchdown, which looked a lot worse than this in my eyes. They're going to look at this play again, but the problem is, how do you rewrite the rule to change the decision from yesterday. Good luck with that.
Yeah, you can't do that.
All right. We have limited time, Andrew, and we're so grateful for you to pop in on the program today. But we have to talk about Peyton Manning. Obviously, that was the one home team and the one favorite that did not win in advance yesterday. Andrew Luck outplayed Peyton Manning. There's no question about that. Nope. What does he do now?
All right. Well, our friend Adam Schefter reported this morning that Peyton's playing with a quad injury, that in the game in San Diego mid-December, you know, when he left the game briefly, that he had a tear of his quad. He played through it. It clearly affected him. I said all throughout the game, there's no way he's calling it quits. He then got up on the podium and was as human and noncommittal as anybody has ever heard him publicly. He said he could not commit to playing next year. He still has to think about it. He is legitimately thinking about it. However, if the quad injury heals, which it should, I think he's playing.
The difference between the teams that are still in the playoffs, and we'll just talk about those games in 1 second, and where Peyton Manning is today, Peyton Manning has a long, long way to get back to the Super Bowl.
Oh, okay, but wait a minute. As Deion Sanders said on NFL Network last night, if he's healthy, meaning the leg, not the arm, he's still better than 8, if not 9, out of 10 quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I mean, go down the list. Would you take him in Tampa? Would you take him in Cincinnati? Would you take him in Miami?
Of course.
Would you take him in Cleveland? Would you take him in Oakland?
Arizona.
Would you take him in Washington? He would have won that game, I'd tell you that, in Carolina, if he were the Cardinals quarterback. So, I mean, do you go out when you're still good enough to go to the Pro Bowl and throw 35 touchdown passes, which is what he still is?
Yeah. Yep. All right, let's talk about the upcoming games. Packers-Seahawks. How do you see that one going?
I mean, if Aaron Rodgers were entirely healthy, I would say that Green Bay has a very good shot. The fact that he is absolutely immobile and has trouble walking up and down the steps, I would say it's Seattle.
Colts-Patriots.
I would be shocked if Indianapolis is within 10 points. I think this is New England's game. But Andrew Luck is the most valuable player in the NFL because that team around him ain't that good. And that's how good he is to lift them up on his shoulders.
But is there any way to force him to shave that caveman beard?
You know, he said
that's
this
a bad, bad beard.
Mom and his girlfriend hate it.
Of course, everyone hates it.
Not getting rid of it.
By the way, for what it's worth, the Seahawks and the Packers played earlier this year. The Seahawks beat Green Bay by 20.
Yes, we won.
The Patriots and the Colts played earlier this year. The Patriots beat the Colts by 20. So for what it's worth, that's what happened earlier this season. So those games are both on Sunday. Early game is the NFC, then the AFC. Andrew, love having you on the show, man. Have fun on the around the NFL Network at 3 o'clock this afternoon. We'll talk soon, okay?
Love you guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Lisa. It's world famous K-Rock at 8:54.
We'll spend some time with comedian Simon Amstel coming up after the top of the hour. First, though, Rob is here with the Showbiz Beat on a Monday.
It is a Monday, so we take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office from the weekend. And here's what the big winner was. Taken 3. No surprise there. People love Liam Neeson kicking ass.
Just killing people.
So an article over the weekend, it was funny, but I thought sort of unwarranted. They talked about Liam Neeson being the AARP action star.
Right.
Mm-hmm. AARP stands for the American Association of Retired People, but it's the old people organization. They said he has become an action star at an age where most actors have to play grandfathers and things like that. And I was like, I think that's as ageist as saying that women of a certain age can't be leads in the movies because they only hire young girls, you know? It's just, I think if you can play the role, whatever the role may be, whatever sex you may be, whatever age you may be, and people enjoy it, then why make a big deal out of it, right?
I'll go see any role he's in kicking ass.
Sure.
That's just.
And when he stops being believable in that situation, then people will stop watching.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, really. Taken 3. $40.4 million made it number one this weekend. Selma, Into the Woods, The Hobbit, and Unbroken were the top five movies at the box office. Then The Imitation Game, Night at the Museum, Annie, The Woman in Black 2, and Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1, rounding out your top 10 at the box office. Interestingly, Bradley Cooper's American Sniper, which is in just 4 theaters so far, managed to pull in $500,000 this weekend.
Yeah. Wow.
It expands into wide release this coming weekend, but for 4 screens, $500,000 is a pretty good take.
No kidding.
I have seen wildly mixed reviews on that film. But I will tell you that every time I see the commercial, it's as good as 30 seconds can be. It's
pretty compelling stuff.
It's pretty compelling.
It does look awesome.
And that Clint Eastwood, he knows how to direct a movie. Yep. As long as it's not about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons.
Which this is not.
So I'm looking forward to checking it out. Foo Fighters over the weekend had a little concert, a little birthday concert for Dave Grohl. Down there at the Forum, the 46th birthday bash was quite the event on Saturday. David Lee Roth stopped by to sing a couple of Van Halen songs with the boys. Panama and Ain't Talking About Love.
Nice.
Slash came by. Tenacious D. They teamed up on Zeppelin's Immigrant Song and Queen's Tie Your Mother Down. Zakk Wylde showed up for a couple Sabbath songs. Alice Cooper came out and did a pair of his hits, School's Out and I'm 18. Paul Stanley of Kiss joined the Foos for Detroit Rock City and Do You Love Me. And, of course, the Foos did a bunch of their own tunes. Proceeds of the concert went to three different music-related charities. But by all accounts, it was quite the brouhaha.
You know what's cool about that is that most bands that have been together for 20 years are just, it seems like they're beaten down and they're staying together. These guys seem like they've never had more fun than right now.
They are having a blast, that's for sure. Miley Cyrus wants to pose for Playboy. What could she possibly show us that we haven't seen? Why would we want to buy a magazine with her naked in it?
Yeah, agreed.
We've seen it all.
Mm-hmm. And it's not
including her blood.
Yeah. Yeah, no thank you.
Apparently she wants to book the shoot by April because that would mean the Playboy spread would be publicity for Miley's next album, which would be due sometime later this year. So the timing would work out right. She'd get the right bump in the press when her new CD dropped. By the way, her boyfriend Patrick Schwarzenegger doesn't mind at all. Apparently she sends him nudes all the time on his phone, so he's very used to seeing pictures of his girlfriend naked.
She Instagrams nudes all the time, too.
Yeah, we've all seen it.
He probably
free the nipple.
Back. Stop it.
Right. Okay, you have nipples. You win. We all have seen them. Stop it.
By the way,
text again when you have boobs.
I know that I am in the minority in this room on this. I think Miley Cyrus is very pretty and very attractive.
I mean, she has her moments.
She has a beautiful face.
That may be an overstatement.
Yeah, that's on you, son. That's
like I said, I know it's an unpopular opinion.
You're entitled to your
gorgeous
opinion,
skin and big, beautiful eyes. I think she's very pretty.
All right, but let's talk about her as a Playboy in Playboy.
No. Absolutely not.
Okay,
she's attractive for a regular girl.
Yeah,
she's not Playboy hot.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you're the one saying she's all beautiful.
I'm saying she's very, very pretty. But she's I don't think she's not Playboy hot.
I just think she's sexy in the way a lot of young slutty girls are, which is she kind of puts it out there and she's well made up and she's attractive, but I don't think she has any sort of looks that are going to carry her for any length of time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I couldn't have been more wrong in every single way.
Thank you. I'm glad you finally acknowledged that. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. One Direction's Zayn Malik is 22 years old today. Actress Naya Rivera is 28. Now let's talk about, you want to talk about beautiful?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great skin and eyes and face?
I agree.
Naya Rivera, right?
I agree. Absolutely. Love her.
If Naya Rivera is on fire, you use Miley Cyrus to put her out. Right? Like you beat her like it was like beating a rug.
I'd say that's a pretty good, yeah.
She's still on Glee.
It's a good plan.
All right, Dave. Thanks. Singer and director Rob Zombie's 50 years old. Oliver Platt turns 55. Howard Stern, 61. Kirstie Alley, 64 years old today. And big wheel genius over there at Pixar and Disney Animation Studios, John Lasseter, celebrates his 58th birthday today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
All week long this week on K-Rock, your chance to win a pair of passes to Coachella, plus see any band playing Coachella again anywhere they play in the world in 2015. Think about that.
That's pretty cool.
You go see Coachella in April, and then you go, hey, I like that fill in the blank. I want to go see them in Barcelona if they're playing there this year, and you get to go. You pick the band, you pick the city. More details at KRock.com. 9 o'clock this morning came and went, and congratulations to Miguel Villalobos from Los Angeles, who just won those tickets, and we'll do it again at noon, 3, 6, and 9. Again, details at KRock.com.
Comedian Simon Amstel, welcome.
Come on.
Yeah. How are you, ladies and gentlemen?
Oh, stop it. It's too much. Too much.
Hi,
that
Simon.
That wasn't very much, I got to be honest.
It's not enough. It's not enough.
Simon is in town because he is playing the Conan show on Wednesday. You did the Tonight Show last Wednesday, and you're doing the Conan show this Wednesday. And tickets are on sale now through LargoLA.com for your show coming up April 20th. How you been? It's been a while since we've seen you.
How long has it been?
It's got to be 6 months, I want to say.
And how what's been happening?
In the 6 months?
Yeah, what's been happening in your life?
Well, we've just been missing you. Just every day we wake up and go, is Simon back on the show? No. Well, I guess we'll still have to just try and do the best we can without him and then hope for tomorrow.
Okay, well, I'm back. So
what's been going on with you since the last time we saw you?
Yeah, that's the question. Mm-hmm. What am I doing? I suppose it's sort of – there's this tour happening. I'm doing like 2 months worth of shows in the UK and Ireland. There's one show in – where is it? Somewhere strange.
You seem completely puzzled by your own tour.
Yeah, there's a man in charge.
They just tell you where to go.
There's a man called Arnold Engelman. He just tells me what to do. He brought me here.
He brought you here. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's best to be – I think if you're a sort of comedian sort of clown type figure, you shouldn't know anything.
Okay. You have to trust it. I know that.
I like that plan.
You shouldn't know anything.
Now, Simon, you're a fascinating fellow to me because your stand-up is very funny, but it is also very therapeutic for you and the audience,
good.
I think.
Good.
What conclusions have you come to in your search for happiness on stage?
It's not possible.
Happiness is not possible.
Happiness doesn't exist.
No, it's. I mean, that's just a.
What a relief.
Yeah, it's a relief, right? I had a moment. There's two moments I think are connected. One, I was in a car and it occurred to me, oh, I'll never be happy. I'll never. And I kept repeating it. I thought, oh, this is fine then. Because then the search is off.
So then you just stopped trying.
I stopped trying to be happy, and then I felt really peaceful. And then I also had a moment in the shower recently where I thought, what if none of this is important? And that was also wonderful. Now, both of these
statements... You're bumming me out, man.
They could feel like a bit suicidal, these statements. But I found them to be very healing. That it's not important, and that you can't really achieve happiness. It's not a sustainable emotion. You don't want to achieve just happiness. You also want to have some sadness and some other stuff. You want to have some anger and some, you want to have the whole gamut of the human experience, right?
I don't think
at me like you just want to be happy.
I just want to be happy.
The rest of us make Kevin.
What's wrong with wanting to be happy?
Well, I mean, this is the problem with you Americans.
Now it's our fault.
It's your fault, yeah. No, you know, but I think, I don't know, what am I saying? I think joy is the thing, joy and vulnerability and all that sort of stuff. And
now, a lot of times we hear that comedians are actually tortured souls and they're just putting on a happy face. You know, they're the sad clown. But you seem like a genuinely jolly, happy person.
Yes, but I'm very tortured on stage.
You are tortured on stage. That is absolutely true. That's why I brought up whether you've come any closer to it. Have you come to any conclusions? Do you feel like you're anywhere closer to happiness than you were before you started this emotional journey?
Yeah, I'm very – I mean, I think we spoke probably about ayahuasca last time, did we? And that journey, going to Peru and drinking this healing plant medicine,
that was
very helpful. 2 years of psychotherapy was very helpful.
Okay.
Just getting older is helpful. Being in a relationship is very helpful. And just letting go of a lot of I think essentially here's the wisdom. You ready for the wisdom?
All right, here we go. Wisdom, people.
We're essentially fine. We come out of our mothers basically all right, and all that happens is we get muddied by nonsense that the culture throws at us and that our own egos create. And I think the healing is shedding all the mud. It's sort of cleaning yourself of all the nonsense that you've added to the perfection.
So in other words, when we're born, we're that new car still in the factory, still in its plastic ceiling, perfectly clean and beautiful. But once you put it out on the road, now you're driving down the road, now you got insects hitting the windshield, now you're in the rain, and now you're in the mud, now you're hitting other cars, and you got people in and out, and that's when everything gets mucked up. And every once in a while, we need to get to the car wash.
Yes, because you're not just experiencing – it would be okay if you were just experiencing the insects and the mud in the moment, but what you're actually doing is remembering and making up a story about all the mud that hit you when you were five as well.
Okay.
So that's the problem.
And so every bad thing that ever happens, we don't get over.
Yeah. I feel like at this point I should also point out that my comedy is very funny. It's really very fun.
You don't feel like you've done a job of conveying that yet?
No, I was very funny before I came in here. And then I don't know what happened.
Did we unfunny you?
Yeah,
I think it was our fault.
I'm going to play a clip, I think, of Simon Amstell, who is an actual comedian from your most recent special, I think. This is you talking about the Queen.
In England, we have a Queen. And not in the past. Right now. To me, what is fascinating about her is she is not embarrassed. She walks into rooms, people stand up, there are trumpets. And I think if that was me, I'd end up saying, oh, no, you mustn't, it's ridiculous. But she stands there and she thinks, yes, this is appropriate. I was born.
As a matter of fact, I was born. See Simon at the Largo April 20th. Tickets on sale now through largo-la.com. And on the Conan Show this Wednesday, we'll take a quick break. More with our guests right after this on K-Rock. Comedian Simon Amstell in studio with us now, bringing his To Be Free tour to the Largo on La Cienega in Los Angeles on Monday, April 20th at 7. Tickets on sale now, just $30 through largo-la.com. Producer Dave told me that you went to a nude beach recently, Simon.
Wow. You have a conversation in one room and then some guy called Dave.
Yes, exactly.
The guy standing right there.
I can't believe this.
He's our spy.
It's true. The last time I finished my sort of smaller U.S. tour last year, I was with some friends of my boyfriend who I just thought I was having lunch with. And then they said, do you want to go to the nudist beach and smoke marijuana? And I said, well, I mean, I'll come to the beach. I probably won't take my clothes off or smoke any marijuana. And then I was nude all high. My mind swimming in the sea with my penis out. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, that kind of nude. The kind where your penis is out.
Yeah, with the penis.
How many people were there?
There were just, I don't know, like maybe 70 people, and there was vaginas, all the everything. It was all everything out there.
Now, Kevin and I have discussed this before. We are not nude beach type people. We would never go.
We are all nude.
Right.
Do you
so my question for you
nude?
Is...
No,
yeah.
You don't
when
have
you show
to
up
be.
There, okay.
You don't have to be, but why,
long,
if you're going to go, you know, you get on a bus, you might as well.
Sure. How long after you took your clothes off did it become not a big deal and just kind of you were comfortable?
No,
with?
Well, I think only with the marijuana did it become not a big deal.
Okay,
because
I gotcha.
Then my focus became on this one of my friend's hair. Then I just wanted to touch his hair. I couldn't figure out how to do that because I didn't know him that well. I was like, how can I touch his hair without it being really creepy?
Did you ever find a way?
It occurred to me on the bus on the way back to the hotel I was staying in. I was like, oh, okay. And he was there. He was right next to me. I was like, oh, maybe I could ask if I could plait it. That'll be fine. Then I went, that's really weird.
There's no way to get past that.
Yeah. It was so great.
Have you ever done stand up while high?
I tell you there was a year in London where magic mushrooms were legal because of some loophole, and I tried magic mushrooms for the first time. I think I was maybe 23 or something like that, and I'd been doing stand-up for a while, but I was still a bit stiff and hadn't really found my voice, whatever that is.
Right.
And then I took these mushrooms, had a great giggly day. And then I had this gig booked that night, and I thought they would have worn off, but it was the loosest, most freeing. I found this silliness, this joy in the same material, but I was delivering it in a way that was so much funnier than it had been before. Not just in my head. People were really,
I was
going to
ask you that. I was going to ask you if you went back later and watched it and went, wow, I thought it was great at the time.
No, it was definitely officially
really?
Funny. And it was because it's you open up some kind of reality with these things, and I think that what's funny is that we're all these egos running around with our anxiety and our things that we regard as important and significant, and the truth, which is what you're hoping to get to with comedy, is that the whole thing's a nonsense and we're all going to die.
Well,
haven't seen Meatlaw yet.
Good times.
I'm glad we're going out on an up note. Well, the reason I thought of the high thing is not only because of your nude beach story, because your show at the Largo is on April 20th, which, as you know, is a very popular marijuana-inspired day here in America. It's practically a holiday for pot smokers.
I don't know why that is. Why is
April 20th is kind of International Pot Smokers Day.
It?
Yeah, a lot of people, I mean, it's practically a holiday here in California. People just go crazy with it and have parties and spark up right at 4:20 and everything like that. But that's the night you're going to be on stage. It might be time to revisit the herb a little bit.
It's either very good or very bad news. I'm not sure, which.
Depends on how high the crowd is and how high you are.
Yeah, because there's a point where it's too that could be too high, right?
Sure. Oh, okay. Absolutely, yes.
All right, well, we'll have to monitor this.
The other tidbit that I got from my spies in the other room is that you have done...
I shouldn't have said anything in this room. What else have you got?
Oh, it's bugged.
We've already talked about your penis. It's not going to get worse than that. And that
it's
is
a great penis. What do you...
you did karaoke recently.
Oh, yeah.
I was trying to... I was thinking about you, and I'm trying to think... what I can picture you doing for karaoke on stage. Like, you look at Simon, Kevin. What do you see him singing up on stage?
Biggie,
like,
Smalls.
What genre? You see him doing Biggie? I was thinking Jay-Z. It's funny you say that.
It was my big hit was Son of a Preacher Man.
Really?
Son of a Preacher Man.
Dusty Springfield.
And I can't reach any of the notes. So my less big hit was the song from Frozen.
The Let It Go?
Yeah, that didn't go very well. But it was fun. I did that straight after doing The Tonight Show, so it was quite a nice release.
Oh, just last week then?
Yeah.
You're finding it easy to just shed your inhibitions and just enjoy yourself. It sounds like you found fun.
Yeah, maybe more so in America than... I think if you're anywhere that isn't, your own country, it's much easier. Like, I find these sort of interview situations, much easier than in England, where I just feel terrified and often make a fool of myself.
Why? Is that because there's a lot more expectation of you
to be
a certain way?
Yeah, there's an expectation to... Yeah, I've done sort of... TV shows where I'm kind of a bit sarcastic and a bit cheeky. And my stand-up tends to be a bit more sensitive and funny in a way that's about me and introspective. And I feel when I'm doing press in England that people want also that... that cheeky guy who's going to... So if this was England, I would sort of have to say something about your face. And I wouldn't want to.
That would be acceptable
face.
Here as well, too, by the way.
Great faces.
Did you ever have any time, any moments in Britain where you regretted being well-known?
There was a point with... No, not really. I mean, it's sort of what I wanted as a kid was a lot of attention, and it's still what I quite enjoy, is being on a stage and people looking at me and laughing. So, but I think there's a level of fame that I'm comfortable with, and if it goes, if it goes above that, I feel uncomfortable, and if it goes below that, I'm probably uncomfortable.
Wow. So, very specific needs.
Are you right about at the right level of fame right now?
I think I could do with a tiny bit more here.
Tiny bit more here.
Yeah,
okay, all right. But you wouldn't want to be. You'd never want to be Ricky Gervais famous, though.
I think it's a bit. I don't know. I mean, these things are so sort of. It's all ephemeral and silly anyway. So I think there's ways of handling it. But sort of Steve Martin in his book talks about just the right level of fame, mm-hmm. and I think you kind of. And Louis C.K. talks about it being none of your business. You know, you do the work, and whatever happens, happens. And I don't know how sincere he is when he says that, but, you know, that's a good point, I think, that you go and be funny, and then whatever the result is none of your business. So
do people mostly leave you alone in Britain?
There's a specific... I've done shows on BBC Two, so not BBC One. You know, I'm sort of a... I don't know what I am. I'm famous to people who like funny good things.
You're really famous to Simon Amstel fans.
Yeah, those people really like me.
All right. Well, you can follow Simon on Twitter at Simon Amstel. That's his website too, simonamstel.com. The To Be Free tour is going to be at the Largo on La Cienega on April the 20th. Get your tickets now. He may or may not be high. You may or may not be high. Go to largo-la.com. And then we'll see you on Conan this Wednesday night. Let's not make it so long before you come back next time, Simon. We really enjoyed this.
I'll see you tomorrow.
6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. It's Kevin and Bean Show at 20 minutes till 10.
Ralph is here. Time for our final look at the showbiz beat here on a Monday morning. What's going on, Ralph?
Since it is a Monday, we always look at the top 10 movies at the box office to see what people went to see in the theaters over the weekend. No surprise, Taken 3 in its debut, $40.4 million. made it number one at the box office. Selma was second at the box office, $11.2 million. Into the Woods, The Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies, and Unbroken were your top five movies. Then The Imitation Game, Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb, Annie, The Woman in Black 2, Angel of Death, Revisited, Electric Boogaloo, and then Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 1, rounding out the top 10 at the box office. You know, we got the TCAs going on right now. If you're not familiar with that, it is when the networks and the cable channels trot out their executives and everyone talks about what the future is for their networks, what shows are going to cancel, what they're going to bring back, what their plans are. They do it in front of the Television Critics Association, hence TCA. It was CBS's turn bat today, and they announced they are renewing three freshman dramas from this past season for the upcoming year. So we'll get more NCIS New Orleans. That's coming back.
Okay.
With Scott Bakula and CCH Pounder, or Chich Pounder, as Dave, the King of Mexico, calls her.
Oh, I like Chich.
Oh, I interviewed Chich Pounder once. Excuse me, Dave? Who'd you talk to? You know, Chich Pounder. Who's Chich Pounder? You know this woman. Oh, you mean CCH Pounder?
In his defense, that's a weird first name.
You know what it's not?
Chich.
Chich.
It's not Chich.
Madam Secretary, that's coming back. Woo! Fine, yes!
Why?
Because Tia Leone's stopping crime with the president.
I haven't seen that one yet.
It's awful.
I thought that was canceled like after the second episode. I haven't heard a word about it.
She should team up with Katherine Heigl. They should all work for the same administration.
I was so surprised to see Katherine Heigl come out as a presenter on the Globes last night because the show wasn't on ABC. I was thinking, why would you put Katherine Heigl on if you don't have to? It was weird.
At least she was stilted and awkward with her comedy banter.
Yeah. She looked good, though.
And Scorpion, as I mentioned last week, it's coming back. So we got that. Well, they also talked about their plans for late night. As we know, Letterman is signing off for the Late Show on May the 20th. When will Stephen Colbert take over as Letterman's successor? Well, now we know. September the 8th is the premiere date for the new Stephen Colbert Late Show.
Right.
Colbert said, I have 9 months to make a show, just like a baby. So first, I should find out how you make a baby.
It's a good starting place.
I love him. Meryl Streep was all over the Golden Globes last night. She is a perennial at these award ceremonies.
She's sitting right up front, too, so you can miss
her. She was, yes.
She also gets a lot of attention from other actors and actresses.
She does.
Well, because she's sort of the best.
Yeah, agreed.
And every actress looks to her as the gold standard. But on top of being a wonderfully talented lady, she's also very funny and down-to-earth, and people just seem to adore her, and rightly so. She even put up with Margaret Cho in a sketch. That's how nice she is. If you need an unfunny Asian woman, Margaret Cho is right there to be cast.
She's the one?
She's always available. Anyway, she was talking to Graham Norton, British talk show host, last week. And she was talking about, sure, she's a big star now and everybody wants to work with her, but when she was young, she couldn't get parts, largely because of her looks. She said she auditioned for producer Dino De Laurentiis for a part in his 1976 film King Kong. Remember King Kong? The reboot, the first reboot of King Kong?
The one with Jessica Lange, right?
It was the big breakthrough role for Jessica Lange. That's where she became a star. She was a model, and her first big acting appearance was in King Kong. So that the role of the woman in peril in that film was a much coveted, sought-after role by a lot of young women in Hollywood. And Dio De Laurentiis' son had seen Meryl Streep in a play and was so impressed by her acting, he brought her in to meet his father, who asked his son in Italian, when she sat down for the interview, "Why did you bring me this ugly thing?"
Wow.
What Dino De Laurentiis did not realize is Meryl Streep was fluent in Italian.
Uh-oh.
That's awesome.
She was a bit shocked, she said, but quickly responded, "I'm sorry I'm not beautiful enough to be in King Kong," she said, and got up and walked out of the interview.
That's
pretty strong.
Hilarious.
She says she can laugh about it now, but back then it was not easy to hear when someone asking that of someone else. So just goes to show you, kids. Everybody's
got to start somewhere, right?
At some point, yeah.
By the way, Ralph, it's so interesting to hear you talk about her having some problems because of her looks at the beginning, because every time I see one of her daughters acting, I always think how odd-looking they are. And they look a lot like Meryl Streep.
They do very much.
We're just, we're so used to Meryl Streep now. Obviously, she's a big star. We accept it. But her daughters look just like her.
She has very, what they call, patrician looks, which is sort of a long face and a very pronounced European nose. Mm-hmm. And it's just not a quintessential American sort of beauty, but there was a time, even when she was young, once she started to become accepted in roles like Sophie's Choice and Kramer versus Kramer stuff, that she was considered a beauty in Hollywood. But I think her daughters are attractive. By the way, talking about awards, this Thursday, they're going to announce the Oscar nominations already. Can you believe
Wow.
It's moving that quick? Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. John Lasseter, big wig over there at Pixar. 58 years old today. Kirstie Alley, you know her from Cheers and from all her own failed TV shows. She's 64 years old. Howard Stern is 61. Actor Oliver Platt turns 55 years old. Singer and director Rob Zombie is 50. Naya Rivera from Glee, 28 years old today. And One Direction's Zayn Malik, if that is his real name, is 22 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you, Ralph. Tomorrow morning on All-New Kevin and Bean Show, we have the Bachelor Report.
Yeah, boy.
P will be calling in. Talking about that show.
How many hours is it tonight, Ralph?
I think it's just two.
Only two hours. Okay.
We also have comedian Nick Kroll in the studio, and two guys are going to fight each other at UFC Fight Night Stockholm. Alexander Gustafsson.
I'm sorry, now what?
No way. No way did I say that right. Alexander Gustafsson and Phil Davis will both be in studio with us tomorrow morning on an all-new show.